And so we're going to start the meeting. We're going to determine if we have a quorum. Madam Clerk, do we have a quorum?
We have a quorum with all members present.
Thank you. Board member that has the board goals, who would that be? No board. Member Gaddis?
Yes, our board goals. Vision, Mat-Su Borough School District will be a model of excellence in teaching, learning, and engaging all students. Mission, Mat-Su Borough School District prepares students for success. Beliefs, we believe that all students can and want to learn. Success breeds success. The needs and best interests of students drive all decisions. Stakeholders, participation is crucial to student success. Our core values are stewardship, accountability, empathy, quality, integrity, efficiency, respect, and lack of reprisal. Goals. We will improve student success, achievement, and performance by focusing on their career and college readiness. We will increase the graduation rate. Our schools will welcome families and community members in the education of our youth. We will create and maintain a safe and healthy environment for our students and staff. Annual objectives, accountability, are assessed by quarterly metrics and timelines.
Thank you. And we're going to be led in the Pledge of Allegiance today by Nadia Meyer, and she is a student here at Mat-Su Central. So let's all rise, please. So I want to thank the Mat-Su Central School Homeschool Correspondence School for allowing us to have our meeting here today, and for the Homeschool Correspondence School community for once again allowing us to have their meeting here in the one of their multi-purpose rooms. The next item on the agenda is 2, approval of the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
I make a motion that we approve the agenda.
Is there a second? Motion made by Member Lacey, seconded by Member Powager. Is there any dissent to approve the agenda? With that, the agenda is approved. And we're going to go down to Section 3, persons to be heard on non-agenda items. I'll read the guidelines here in just a moment, but just an added clarification. We're going to have some items tonight that are being brought to us for the first time, and protocol is such that when we have items brought to us for the first time, we get a staff report, and then if they're brought again, that's when we have public comment and a staff report once again before there's any action. So there may be there's some items this evening that deal with charter schools, and there may be some other issues. So if folks want to speak to that, it would probably be more appropriate in this next section, which is persons to be heard on non-agenda items. So if you haven't signed up or if you want to come forward and speak to that, you'll be able to do so in just a minute after we read through the guidelines. So with that, the speaker will state his or her name for the record. The speaker is limited to 3 minutes per meeting. The speaker is limited to non-agenda items. Agenda items will be open for public comment as they appear on the agenda. The speaker's comments should be appropriate for all audiences, including school-aged children. The speaker is limited to comments of a general nature, positive or negative, which may not be attributable to any specific individual. Issues involving concerns specific to any single individual should be submitted in writing and given to the board clerk to be resolved. The issue may be determined to be appropriate for persons to be heard or may be handled in an executive session or may be routed through a more appropriate complaint process. No disturbance or willful interruption of any board meeting shall be permitted. Persistence by an individual or group shall be grounds for the chair to terminate the privilege of addressing a meeting. The board may remove disruptive individuals and order the room clear if necessary. This is not a question and answer time. Speakers may be referred to the superintendent or designee or take the issue under advisement. Maximum of 1 hour per meeting. We also will have another section towards the end of the meeting. So if there are any folks that wish to speak on non-agenda items, this is your opportunity. Member Clerk, or Madam Clerk.
The first person signed up is Grace Aubrey.
Grace, if you can come to where the mic is and speak into it and let us know who you are for the record.
My name is Grace Aubrey.
Thank you.
When I first came to Matsu Central School, I was 6 years old. We chose this school because it had a great opportunity and potential for me. Our old school building had many problems. For example, not enough space for teachers or classes. Mr. Sawyer, our computer whiz, was in between bookcases. Books were always in the hallways, and there was no place for new activities we wanted. I spoke before you 2 years ago because our school was not what it could be, and you were considering taking money away from our school. Now I am here to thank you. We have more than double space than we had before. Teachers have their own office. Mr. Sawyer is not in danger of falling computers. We have more rooms for new classes. And our math lab has an actual classroom. The increase in space helps the littler kids have a place to go when their parents are in meetings, while the older kids can use the computer lab or the parent room in between classes. I want to thank the members of the school board and Dr. Paramo for helping our school to improve. Our school is still not the best it can be, but it is a great school, and we are improving it day by day. While a school is not great because of its size, it sure helps to have more space. We are lucky to have such a wonderful school. Thank you very much for helping us make our school a better place for everyone.
Thank you.
Sharon Aubrey.
Again, please state your name for the record.
My name is Sharon Aubrey, and that was my daughter, Gracie. We traveled 27 miles tonight through terrible winds and a 30-foot-long snowdrift that was about 4 foot deep at our house to be here tonight. We sincerely appreciate all your initiative and your effort to bring our school into the 21st century. Matsu Central School's new building is a testimony to the efforts of Dr. Burnley, Mr. Ken Forrest, Dr. Paramo, and each of you sitting here tonight serving on the school board. We recognize that your jobs are often spent with long, stressful hours and a lack of public gratitude. Many times parents come to you to complain about problems and legitimate problems, but I think that too often when you take the effort and the initiative to resolve those problems, not so many of us show up to say thank you. And so Gracie and I, we wanted to come tonight to say thank you. We really appreciate what you have each done for our school.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to speak on non-agenda items at this time? Okay. Remember, we'll have another section towards the end of the meeting. At this point, are there any borough or city reports? Seeing none, this takes us down to item 5, administrative reports. FY11 audit presentation by Makunda, Cottrell & Company. Dr. Paramo.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm going to turn the mic over to our Assistant Superintendent of Business, Mr. Ken Forrest.
Good evening. Yes, we have the senior audit partner for the firm here today. If Eric could move to the table, he has a presentation for you tonight with regard to the audit for the last fiscal year. And I believe Eric can speak for himself. And I want to point out that actually, as the external auditor, the auditor works for the board. This report is for you.
Exactly. Oh, excuse me. Are we going to have an overhead or no?
Yeah, if that's okay. Okay. Stay there. All right. Thank you very much. Again, my name is Eric Campbell. I'm with Makunda, Cottrell & Company, and we're a certified public accounting firm out of Anchorage, Alaska. We did the audit this year for June 30, 2011, and I have in front of you just some of the highlights of the financial statements and then a little bit of trend information to go over. On page one, this is the independent auditor's report. When we perform the audit, we basically perform four different audits. There's a financial statement audit. There's an audit of internal controls to make sure you're in compliance with government accounting standards, an audit of compliance with state grant requirements and federal grant requirements. So this is an opinion on the financial statement audit. And the third paragraph says, in our opinion, the financial statements are materially stated or fairly stated in all material respects. So this is a clean opinion or an unqualified opinion on the financial statements. The next page, this is the statement of net assets from your financial statements. This schedule here is on the full accrual basis of accounting. This includes all of your funds, and it includes all of your long-term assets and your long-term liabilities. This is the only you know, balance sheet in here that will include capital assets, your capital equipment, $2.3 million, and down under your liabilities, the accrued leave, $5.1 million, your long-term liabilities. So including all of your long-term assets, long-term liabilities, you have $22.9 million of assets, $13.8 million of liabilities. So you have net assets of $9 million. Of that, 6.7 is restricted. I won't go into net assets too much because I think fund balance is a better picture in a couple pages here of what is, you know, you have spendable and non-spendable. On the next page, your statement of activities. This is Exhibit B1 in the financial statements. I just like to point out in the far right-hand column, this is the net cost of all of your activities that are not paid for with grants or other special fundings. You know, so you have, you know, the sort of the bottom right-hand corner, to $201 million. That is the amount of money that needs to be paid from, you know, general revenues, you know, your state formula funding and borough contributions for the most part. And then there's some other, you know, reimbursements. The next page, this is Exhibit C1. And Exhibit C1, this is on the modified accrual basis of accounting. And you can see the left-hand column is your general fund. That's for the most part the fund that you focus on. You want to build up as much fund balance there as possible. And then the far right-hand column is all of your governmental funds combined. So you can see combined, your governmental funds are $30.6 million. Your liabilities, $18.9 million. So your fund balance is $11.6 million. Of that, fund balance looks different this year. There was new accounting rules with how you classify fund balance. Instead of restricted and unrestricted, it's now non-spendable, which in this case is basically inventory and prepaid. Restricted, which is scholarship funds. Committed, you have $7.2 million committed for capital improvement projects, so future projects coming online. $1.5 million of assigned, that's fund balance that for the most part comes from grants. And then unassigned, that's basically your spendable fund balance. And then total, your spendable fund balance is $860,000. So you have 1.4 in the general fund, and then there's a negative, which is the offset to the inventory non-spendable in your non-major funds. So in your general fund, you have $9.8 million of assets, $6.9 million of liabilities, $2.8 million of fund balance. And of that, $1.4 million is unassigned. So. Exhibit C3, Statement of Revenues, Expenditures, and Fund Balance. This is your combining governmental funds, revenues, and expenses. First column there, your general fund, $207 million of revenues and expenses, $199 million of expenses. So you brought in almost $8.5 million more revenue than what you spent in the general fund. $8 million was transferred to other funds, $6.9 of that to capital improvement projects to pay for future projects, $892,000 to cover other funds, student transportation, food service for the most part. And so your net change in general fund balance, $380,000. In total, far right-hand column, your net change in fund balance was $6.5 million. So an increase this year to the bottom line of $6.5 million. And again, a majority of that is sitting in your capital improvement projects for future projects. So then you got your proprietary funds. Far right-hand column is your self-insurance internal service fund. This is sort of a reserve for payments that are going to be made after June 30th for workers' comp for the most part. You have cash of $1.3 million in there and an insurance reserve of $1.3 million. Exhibit D2, same thing, only the revenue and expense side. $1.7 million of inter-fund charges. These are monies coming over from your other funds to cover workers' comp. And $2 million of expenses, so a decrease of fund balance of $291,000 in that fund for the year. Then you have to transfer $291 from the general fund, actually. And just some sort of some statistical data. You know, borough population this year, 84,000 compared to 82,000 in the prior year. School enrollment up to 17,000 from 16,700 in the prior year. So you can see it looks like it's starting to level out a little bit. Some of your, you know, your crazy jumps are leveling out. Next one, you are the largest employer in the state, in the borough, I'm sorry. Largest employer in the borough. School employees, down almost 200 school employees this year. So, average teacher salary from 62.1 to 63.6. This will be a really interesting slide next year with the SERP that you guys just accomplished. Total assets, $30.6 million. You know, by far, you know, almost double what you've ever had. You've doubled your assets basically over the last year. Next slide, revenues. 251 compared to 224 in the prior year. Way back in 2002, you only had 118,000. Total expenditures, 221 compared to 203. Total expenditures per student, 14,400. Total expenditures excluding pension. Pension's such a large swing over the years, you know, that, you know, it's worthy of to pull out to see, you know, what the expenditures are net of that pension. General fund revenues, $208 million, up from $190. Expenditures, up $11 million. Up $105 since 2002. Instructional. State law is you have to have higher than 70% of your expenditures instructional. You're at 78%, so plenty of room there. Workers' comp claims, kind of all over the board there, really. Next one. I think we have a version conflict here with our PowerPoint. Because my PowerPoint had them going up. Actually, I think we have a different version PowerPoint. This happens when you have different versions. But anyway, it's kind of hard to figure out your fund balance 2.8 million up from that's actually up from 2.4 million. So hey, there you go. Unassigned 1.4 up from 1.1. This, you know, prior years, this was unreserved. New wording, unassigned now. Borough appropriation, $48 million, up from $43. Per student, $2,800, up from $2,600. Appropriation lapse, this year, $268,460 was lapsed back to the borough. Last year, $1,132,481. Student transportation. Your revenues are slightly under $12 million, and your expenses are, you know, about $12.5 million. Pretty much across the board, and you know, most districts, the revenues are not covering the expenses for this. So, transportation. Per student, $738. Food service, same thing. You know, I don't know of any schools that, you know, the revenues cover the expenses. So you're pretty close, though. Actually, you're know, you're, you know, what, five, you know, 5.7 million to, you know, you're about what, 500,000 hours short. So, food services per student. This is actually one Dina mentioned years ago. She said, is that per student or is that per meal? I'd love to have this per meal, you know, but it's, I don't have that information. Might be able to dig that up actually, but, you know, expense per student, $362. So, it's not bad. Divide that by, what, 180 days, $2 a day. So, federal and state single audit, federal funding, $29 million. State funding, almost $170 million. As I said in the beginning, there was four audits, financial statement audit, audit of internal controls, compliance with state grant programs and federal grant programs. There were, in those other audits, there were no reportable conditions, no question cost, and you had an unqualified opinion on your on all of your other audits also. So clean audits across the board, no instances of noncompliance were noted. That's it. So, and probably just, you know, I'd like to just state that you know, your staff does a phenomenal job preparing for the audit. I mean, it's clean, it's neat, it's organized, and you know, they do a great job, and they make it as easy as it can be. So,
thank you. Are there any questions for members of the board? Member Pollinger.
I was wondering if this is going to be posted anywhere for people to look at if they would like.
I believe you have it on your website, don't you? Yeah.
Okay. Just to follow up, no anomalies, no issues, nothing that you think the board should be concerned about?
Absolutely not.
I would like to point out and, again, thank the accounting staff and both Joyce Stein and Terry Irwin for all their hard work and the fact that the audit last year did win the Certificate of Excellence in Financial Reporting, and this will be submitted for evaluation for the award again.
Any questions for members of the board? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
This takes us down to item six, Superintendent Update, Student Advisory Board Report. Member Mitchell.
This past Wednesday, the Student Advisory Board met at Valley Pathways. They were really gracious hosts. We had a great meeting there. The majority of our focus was on our upcoming leadership conference. It's going to be next February, or this coming February, next month. And so that was the majority of our discussion. We talked about everything from facilities and food, and all of our speakers are secured. So we're going over and finalizing the details for that. And we've also, the past few months, been working through the process of writing resolutions that we'd like to present to the school board. And so last meeting, we made a formal presentation to our advisory board of the resolutions. And we went through the discussion process and worked with parliamentary procedure. And so those have been brought back to committees for revision, and hopefully they'll be presented to the school board after our February meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Paramo.
Thank you, Mr. President. As you can see on the agenda, we do have an item that will remain under the superintendent update titled Capital Projects Update. And I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Forrest, and this is in regard to general capital projects, but primarily as with a bond update. I will be speaking more to the budget at a later time, so I'll reserve those comments, but I can't let the opportunity to speak on behalf of how I was delighted to hear a student from this school, Gracie. She's probably one of the most composed young students we have come forward. Excellent job, Gracie, and that I think is evidence of the efficacy of the program at Mat-Su Central School and her homeschooling experience. So I'm very impressed. Thank you, Gracie.
Just a short report on the capital projects related to the bond. We have had both a couple meetings and telephone calls working with the borough to see what can be done to move the financing along. All of the projects were submitted to deed. They are now undergoing evaluation and review. We are awaiting the information from deed that they have been approved. There are 21 separate categories of projects as of date, None have been approved. They did request some additional information. It has been forwarded, and we're trying to keep almost in constant contact with DEED so that any information they may need to facilitate a speedy response can occur. We are a little bit concerned if we have any significant delay on these approvals, it will prevent the borough from moving forward with the financing, and we'll lose this summer for construction. So we're working as hard as we can to make sure that does not happen.
Any questions for members of the board? Seeing none, thank you. Is there any additional reporting under this section?
No, Mr. President.
Okay. This takes us down to item 7, which is the consent agenda. Is there a motion to move the agenda? Consent agenda.
I make a motion that we move the consent agenda.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion made by Member Lacey, seconded by Member Pollager. Is there any dissent to move the agenda? Seeing none, agenda is moved. This takes us down to item 8. Action items. 12-058, second reading, BP4419.5, electronic communications between employees and students. Reference 4. This is a policy to address electronic communication between employees and students. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, is there a staff report?
We are prepared to answer any questions as we have addressed this in 2 prior meetings.
Are there any questions for members of the board regarding this item? Member Larson.
When it comes to the floor, I'd like to make a friendly amendment to it.
Okay. Is there a motion to move this item?
I have a question for staff.
Okay.
Okay. Dr. Paramo or your staff, in regards to the section that talks about social networking, and he talks about the employees need to show receive permission to use personal social networking site for educational purposes from the school principal. What about those who are already using it? Are you going to send a memo and ask them to update you? And how are you going to go about that?
Correct. Once the board makes policy, we do review what's happening in schools. We get the information out, and we start procedures to notify staff and to bring that forward.
Okay. And just to clarify, professional staff using personal social media sites shall not accept students or friends. So that means that they have to have a separate account. Let's say a teacher has a Facebook account. They have to create a separate account to be able to use it after they get permission from their principal. Because if the way I read this, not accept students or friends, that means that currently they wouldn't be able to. So can you clarify that?
Correct. A Facebook site that is used for educational mm-hmm. purposes would be to maybe advertise a team event mm-hmm. or a club. Those sites that are driven through the education would not accept friends. Mm-hmm. We do have another technology, if you will, or program called Edmodo
right.
that will be used to accept friends and communicate back and mm-hmm. forth for educational purposes, but that will be run from within inside the district. A personal email of a staff member that doesn't have any educational purposes, it wouldn't. It would be their personal account, so it would happen outside. But we do have the availability to use a Facebook-like site called Edmodo that is safe and secure for parents to understand.
Thank you.
Is there a motion to move this item?
Make a motion that we move this item.
Second.
Motion made by Member Lacey, seconded by Member Larson. Motion's on the floor. Any questions? Additional questions?
A friendly amendment to this, if I could, please. And if you look at the first paragraph, the last sentence virtually reads, all electronics and any other communication by district employees to the students at any time shall be professional, acceptable, and the content to any reasonable person, and limited to information that is school-related or that is acceptable to both students and parents /guardian. If you go down to the next paragraph, the last sentence, or second to the last sentence, it says the district prohibits the use of the district technology to electronically communicate with students for a purpose not related to such educational services. I would also like to put that or in there, which would read, or that is acceptable to both students and parents, parents and guardians, because it says it's acceptable in that upper line, then it goes down two lines and says it is not. But I'd like that or just to repeat itself.
I'll second the amendment.
Is amendments and second, we're going to vote on the amendment this time. Member Cordero.
Yes.
Member Lacey.
Yes.
Member Welton.
Yes.
Member Pauser.
Yes.
Member Gaddis.
Yes.
Member Larson.
Yes.
I too vote yes. This takes us back to the main motion. And again, it's 12-058, second reading BP4419.5, electronic communications between employees and students. Again, it's on the floor. Are there any additional questions for staff at this time? Seeing none, let's vote. Do you have a question?
I make a comment. I appreciate the hard work on this. I do.
Okay. Any additional comments? Okay, thank you. We're going to vote on this item. Member Cordero?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Pauser?
Yes.
Member Gaddis?
Yes.
Member Larson?
Yes.
And I, too, vote yes. Okay, we're just going to take just a very brief at ease, just for a couple minutes.
Ready?
We're back in session. This takes us down to item 9, non-action items. There will be public comment on these items. Guidelines are the same for persons to be heard. Folks that wish to speak on these items, there will be a 3-minute limit. We're going to go to the first item, which is A, 12-062, new course approval, performance poetry. Is there a staff report?
Mr. President, I would request that A, B, and C be treated as one unit. They are all new courses. I will have staff come forward that if there are questions in regard to these courses, that we will be ready to answer those questions. Otherwise, please know that A, B, and C, there is not additional staff reports.
If that's the case, with agreement of the board, I'll read all three of those items for the public so they understand what is being discussed at this time. So once again, you have A, which is 12-062, new course approval, performance poetry. Item B, or B, is 12-063, new course approval, principles of archaeological science. And then C is 12-064, new course approval, biomedical. So members of the board, or excuse me, staff? Members of the board, are there questions for staff on these three course items? Member Pauser?
I was just wondering where the courses would be taught, if they'd be taught at all of our high schools or at Career Tech. Where would the courses be taught?
I will speak for Principles of Archaeological Sciences and Performance Poetry. They can be taught at any of the high schools, so it would go in our program studies and be available at any high school that wishes to teach it.
The biomedical, we will start at Career and Tech in Houston High School, and then from there we'll grow out to the other high schools.
Member Larson?
Performance poetry, how is the grade, how is it graded?
A through F.
But?
One credit.
One credit.
And it's English credit.
And it's mostly oratory, getting up and...
Yes, it would be much more performance-oriented. We have in our different schools and some of the courses, they have like poetry slams, so much more of the course would be geared toward oral interpretation, oral poetry.
So it'll be subjected by the teacher to determine if this person is an A poetry oratory?
They would have a rubric that would identify the key elements that they're looking for.
Okay, that's what I was looking for. Thank you.
It's pretty much graded like any other class?
Yes.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for staff at this time? Okay, this item will come up at the next meeting. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item at this time? Once again, it's three items being combined for the purpose of discussion. Seeing no members of the public wishing to speak on this item, this will take us down to item D, which is 12-065, school year calendars. Is there a staff report?
Mr. President, I will let you know that Assistant Superintendent Jean Stone and Human Relations Director Katie Gardner were the team leaders for creating the calendar. That is a previous job that I once had that I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Stone. They are prepared to do a small introduction and then answer any questions as needed.
All right. Yeah, as Dr. Promo said, I was tasked with this to organize a committee, and this historically, last year, a two-year calendar was presented to the board. There was some public comment. Somebody from the community that was in disagreement with the calendar, and our primary concern was that because of the change in the calendar previously, school year started 2 weeks later, so that it could accommodate people to go to the fair, and so basically school started after Labor Day, and her primary concern was that her labor pool was affected by this, and so we gave the board put it back to the district to investigate this further and have some community input. So we put together a committee of 17 people in November. We had representation from all employee levels, and then had two parents from the community that also sat on the committee, including the individual who expressed the concern last year to the board. The board, after the committee met, we came to agreement to make recommendations. Those are written in the board report. We put out a survey for every for all the community to participate in. I think at to date, Katie, we have
1,184 respondents.
Respondents. Basically, what the committee recommended is that we put together a three-year calendar so that we would have a calendar for year 13, 14, 15. And the primary purpose for that recommendation is, as a district, we end up really having some limitations when we're not able to project out with ASA, also with our professional development, trying to secure for events, for our professional development, securing our speakers and people that we want to have come to the district and commit to our district. So if you look at Anchorage has a five-year calendar. We felt like a three-year calendar is really in the best interest of students in the district.
Just one quick note on the survey so everyone's aware. The information that was part of the board item was from a little while ago, and so you can see there was about 660 respondents at that time. Now there's a little over 1,100. We had a lot of additional parents actually comment. Now the individuals who represent only parents were the majority of the respondents for the survey, so that did change. But the percentage splits on their responses to the answers, there was really no significant difference, so we didn't try to provide additional information as those responses were pretty much the same. But we had a lot of additional parent feedback since this was done. That was good. We were appreciative of that.
Any questions for the staff, members of the board? Member Larson?
Yeah, the only I got a lot of feedback, but one of the major feedback I got was on the 15-minute later change, and I see in it that it's 75% stay the same and change 15 minutes later is 25%. The comments to me were, hey, I thought you guys set this up last year, that you were going to move forward 15 minutes this year and 15 minutes next year. Why is a survey stopping that progression. And my understanding is that it wasn't set in stone and that we were going to look at it, and it wasn't going to automatically occur. Is that my interpretation here? Or?
Yeah, I think, Member Larson, that was exactly what it was. We were going to implement with the possibility. The research says that really that ideally that you don't start school any earlier than 8 a.m. But we also understand that we're a little different community geographically and also how we have to transport kids, that logistically we have some other things that maybe a typical urban place like Anchorage wouldn't have to deal with. So really, I think from the input and from what we gathered, we felt like it would really probably be in the best interest of the district for this next year to just continue on with what we have. It would have been, we did get feedback from elementary people that's probably been the biggest adjustment. We've got a lot of good feedback from the secondary. I think they were happy to move closer to that 8 o'clock start. Elementary is probably had the greatest, adjustment piece to it.
Member Larson.
Again, the reason it was brought up, we had the pros and cons. I had some issue with this when it first came up and said, let's go for it, and we were going to do it over a two-year period, although we're not going to do it now. I'd like some pros and cons of why we're not doing it, just so I have that information to be able to relate back to people. And I also don't want this just to fall off the radar. You know, if we do a 3 or 5 year calendar, I don't want to say we're never going to come back and visit this later start date.
Mr. Larson, they were actually two separate items last year, but because we wanted some feedback and the timing was right with the calendar survey, we added that question. But more than not, feedback from elementary is please don't have us go 15 minutes later because that would push our end date later where the children would get off the bus. Some of our bus rides are over 60 minutes and they would get home so late. The secondary response, to let you know, initially, change is hard for everybody. So initially at the beginning of the year, it was difficult for secondary students. They felt the time change the same time that they felt the 7-period-day schedule change. So there was lots of change. Now, what had happened is because we shored up some bus routes and bus times, some schools, even though we moved the clock or the official time 15 minutes later, there are four schools, secondary schools, that actually experienced a 25-minute start time because we staggered their start times because of busing. So we were able to shore up the busing drop-offs to be more simultaneous with each other, so we didn't have much waiting. Colony High is one of those, Houston High. So some of our secondary schools actually benefited from a 25-minute later start time with this change. Personally, the calls that I actually responded to were from elementary, from everything from it's too late in the evening, it's hard for me to drop off my child because I start work at 9, to actually staff saying I'm losing the kids because it's too late, they're tired, they just get tired and they're hungry. And so it was pretty much across the board. And so I just asked at the really the 11th hour for the team of the calendar committee, can you get me some solid feedback other than anecdotal that we've been taking? That's why the question was just sliced in there this year. But the original plan last year was just a suggestion that I made to the former superintendent. I just had suggested to him, start time always comes up with our board. The constituents let us know time and time again that high schools start too early. Here's a plan that might work. But really, it was just a thought that I had heard discussed as well. It was actually Principal Okeson who had discussed it at one time. moving 10 minutes, and from there we tried it. But it the intention was always to be sure that the community, we took in the community feedback in response to make an additional changes. I hope that answers some questions for you to be able to talk to your constituents for their concerns.
Member Gaddis.
I think it might be helpful if you could just rattle off the start times for elementary and the end times, and the same thing with high school and middle school, so that we'd be real clear.
Secondary schools, which are our middle schools and high schools, and this is the schools that run on the general bus schedule. Please note that our charter schools may have different start times. Elementary school begins at 9:15 and ends at 3:45. Secondary schools that I just referenced as 6 through 12, middle school and high school, begins at 7:45 a.m. and completes their day at 2:15 p.m.
Thank you.
Member Welton.
Just noting the early release days for the second group of calendars. What we're looking at leaving at noon on those days?
The administration is not recommending that the board adopt the early release calendar, but the proposal did have school end for secondary just after lunch. So there was transportation and lunch served every day, and so it would be different for elementary schools. But basically, I think it was 11:45 for secondary schools. It was about a 3-hour or 3.5-hour early release.
It's not recommended because of the cost?
There was feedback, as you can see. The parents did not support that. They felt that it was a burden. The number one reason for that was as a result of childcare. Also, there is an additional cost that's associated with it, and there was some concern by staff as well, saying, you know what, it's actually easy for me to focus on a full day where I have release, and some of that kind of feedback, we decided that there wasn't enough overwhelming support to move in that direction at this time.
Thank you.
This will be brought up at our next meeting for final approval. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item that we were just discussing? Once again, this item will come up at our next meeting. Thank you. This takes us down to E12-066, name approval for Early College Alaska School. Dr. Perarmo.
Thank you. I will speak to this briefly. As you know, the Early College Alaska is a board objective, a standalone board objective, to offer a program, an opportunity for students to receive dual credit. It stemmed out of the work of some educators who had an idea for a charter school that we discussed to work with consultant who had done some early college or middle college work in another state. And so this is the work that's come to date. In receiving funding for a separate school site, you need to have a separate school name to apply to JUNO, to EED, to start a new school, to receive a school number, and start the funding. Matsuboro School District is requesting to begin the Early College Alaska School, which will, we can follow up with actually the program of that school. It is for 11th and 12th graders. We do have a partner in the UA system and a campus at the Jack White Building in Eagle River, which is a UA-owned campus. We have transportation worked out. We have memorandum of agreement. What we need is the school approved by our school board to move ahead so that we may go to the state, create a school for purposes of funding. Once we understand where the funding is, we would like to then complete the work with the original teachers who brought this forward to open the school. However, we are operating on three scenarios right now, and they depend on the type of funding that EED will allow for this school. Please note that we are going for full funding, not 0.8. I have met with the commissioner. He believes that there's great support for this. A school of choice is certainly in the governor's educational plan. And in addition, that it is a district-wide availability, not a lottery that only certain kids can come in, but district-wide. Kids would have access to this, so the boundaries are open, is also another tenet of Governor Parnell's education plan. And so we're struggling right now in working with the state because the statutes that were written for school sites did not ever dream that you would start a middle college in Eagle River when you're in Mat-Su and the like. So we did work with Anchorage. Please know that I did personally get an approval from Carol Cuomo that the school be located in Anchorage. We are not interested in having Anchorage students, asking them to attend. However, if students just like now, if students from Anchorage desire to go to school in Mat-Su, there is a provision in the state that does allow that, where the two school districts would work together. But this is really for Mat-Su kids, and we just have a partner in the UA system, K-12 Outreach, that is working with us, as well as with the Career and Technical Center for UA, which is actually located in the Sadler's Building. That they have, but they also have a campus in Eagle River, which would be closer for us. So really the detail of program, we can follow up. What we need to know is that detail can't be shored up without the funding, which comes from a board approving a name of a school, if you can understand that. So in summary, we would like to open a early college Alaska school, not program.
Any questions? Member Pollager.
Just the obvious one. Why isn't this at Mat-Su College?
At the time, Mat-Su College just wasn't ready. It wasn't their time to be ready for something like this. In the future, we would love to partner with them. We believe it's going to be a great success, and there is momentum at the state level with the commissioner to really assist us in opening this school.
Member Larson.
So the funding will cover transportation, courses, all the teachers, the whole nine yards?
With the memorandum of agreement, if they belong in the UA system, the people mover will transport the students. One of the tenets was not to put a yellow bus in front of a college. And so people mover actually does pickups here, and the students would have an ID to get on the people mover bus. And actually, we're not simply just buying credits. This is really open to all kids. So the top quartile, the next quartile, the quartile below 50%. And the job of the teachers is to build the capacity for students in language arts and mathematics to pass the ACCUPLACER to be able to take a college course and then turn around and receive dual credit. So K-12 teachers are needed for part of this program for the students that would need that access. But the governor's plan is that college can be for all students, and that's the goal. So really the details have been finally worked out, but we are at a standstill until we know the funding.
And this will be back once again at the next meeting. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item at this time? Again, this will be back at our next meeting for action. This takes us down to item F, 12-068, resolution 12-004, charter school fund balance. Dr. Parma.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd also like to request that administration be able to speak on F and G simultaneously. They are both resolutions that the Charter School Committee, along with Mr. Forrest and myself and Jean Stone, worked with the Committee of Charter Schools. They requested that we take a look at these. The charter school principals and APCs assisted actually in writing the resolutions, and we ran them through our council to be sure that what we are asking for is in line and appropriate. we do believe that these are good things for kids. Bringing money back to these programs, not having to pay the taxes, and all actually receiving the fund balance are all prudent to be able to use operational monies in the schools and not have them be rebated back to the borough. I'm going to turn it over to Ken for the details, but administration believes these should move forward.
Just for the public record, administration is asking for the purpose of discussion that we combine items F and G. F, again, is 12-068 resolution, 12-004 charter school fund balance. And then G is 12-069 resolution, 12-005 charter school tax refund.
As Dr. Right. Paramo indicated, we received a request from the committee, the charter school committee. We worked with it and sent it to the district's attorney, Saul Friedman, who is here this evening, should you have legal questions. The board may remember that you submitted a similar ordinance related to the fund balance last year to the assembly. It was defeated by one vote. So we absolutely support the charter schools in their effort to maintain and retain their fund balance. We also previously have supported their request for not paying property taxes. So we would also like to do the same thing, but in to honor the charter school request, we did not merge our request with the charter, so the board may consider these separately. You will be seeing us submitting our fund balance request amendment or amendment resolution again to the borough. But to honor the charter school's request, we recommend that you move forward with the request first.
Questions from members of the board for staff?
Sorry, and I would hope that you see in that resolution that there's actually an ordinance that says school buildings or buildings for the purpose of education should be tax exempt. And that certainly qualifies every one of our charter schools.
And this building.
Member Larson.
That ordinance you're talking about refers to state statutes, also says that same thing. So you have the state statutes that says that and the borough ordinance. That it says may, right? Is that the magic word that we're looking at?
No.
What's the
Mr.
word?
Mr. Friedman is here, but we have... Not to criticize attorneys, but we have a difference of opinion with regard to the interpretation of the statute by the borough at the present time. So we think the resolution is written requesting that the property taxes be rebated as appropriate as we move forward and working with the borough on their interpretation of the state statute. State statute says they are exempt. It's just how you collect it, I mean, how you interpret it. And then the other issue is, do you have to own the building? Because all of these facilities are owned by other than the schools themselves. To include this facility, we're leasing this facility. And so that is part of the question.
Member Larson.
Our attorney's interpretation of this, can we get in the reading file just the interpretation of that, I mean, the argument on that. If the state statute says
you can bring him up here.
This will occur.
Mr. Freeman, if you could come to the
maybe front. You could talk a little bit on that issue.
This is a time for the board to ask questions of administration, so here you go.
excuse me, both the state constitution and state statutes say that property that it is that is used for educational purposes shall be tax exempt. It doesn't address the issue of ownership of the property. So clearly, if a city or borough uses property for educational purposes, that property would be tax exempt. The question comes down to, what happens when you have private ownership that is leasing property to a school, such as a charter school, even though that property is used for educational purposes? The issue comes down to whether that property remains or should be tax exempt. The argument for it being tax exempt is that both the Constitution and state statutes do not state that ownership is one of the factors that have to be considered. The argument, on the other hand, is that when a private landowner leases the property for school purposes, the money that is coming from that lease is profit money. It's business money for that landowner, and it changes the property more. They're looking at where the money goes and what the money may be used for, as opposed to what the purpose of the building is for. The borough's position is, and I looked, we tried to find the format for seeking a tax exemption, but only nonprofit organizations that own property and use the property for school purposes are eligible for tax exempt status. So if you have a nonprofit that opens a school, or it could be a nonprofit hospital, other purposes are like hospital uses, then the tax exempt status will accrue to that nonprofit ownership. But the borough at this point in time is not allowing that tax exempt status to accrue to a private business ownership of land, even if that land is used for public school purposes. So what we did with the ordinance, with the resolution, is to say, fine, we accept that. We're not willing to take that fight on at this point in this resolution, because that's going to be a battle that is not going to be dealt with or resolved through resolutions. But we said, fine, if a charter school is paying taxes as a portion of its lease, which is always going to be the case, a landlord passes through taxes by having the lease payments cover not just profit and overhead and whatever, but the taxes as well, then those taxes would be rebated by the borough back to the charter school, so the net effect is the same. The charter school is not paying taxes, whether directly to the borough or through the landlord. That's the impact of the resolution.
Member Gaddis.
I need to be caught up, because in our subcommittee meetings with the borough and the school district, we've discussed this issue, and what I last thought I heard was that the borough was working with us, but they didn't, and their attorney did not think that they couldn't tax us, so that they felt they should, that they had asked that we write a resolution like this one. And it was my understanding that they wanted to rebate the tax back to the school district, and they wanted the school district, or more importantly, the school board, to assure them that we would, again, funnel it back to that each charter school. I don't know if things have changed or if I'm up to date, but, you know, in fairness, it sounds as if the borough may not be working with us, and I got the impression that they even tried to put forth an ordinance to try to make this work, and like you say, their attorney did not agree. But it sounds like we're both working together, unless something's changed.
We are. There are members of the borough staff that are saying it cannot be done. And so, hence the resolution. There was an attempt to get a member of the assembly to carry an ordinance, and that failed. Due to recommendation from borough staff. So we're kind of formalizing this and sending it to the borough from this elected body to the assembly to say we really do want you to consider this again.
Thank you.
Any other questions to staff regarding these two resolutions at this time?
Just one quick question.
Question? Member Larson?
Quick question. If a private school is there for profit, but it is a school, they couldn't. There's a school I know in the valley that is a privately owned school, and I assume they're there for profit. They're not a religious school. They're not a nonprofit. They would not fall under this ordinance, a state ordinance, or would they fall under the same?
The way the borough interprets the state law right now, and what the borough's policy appears to be, is that if you have a for-profit corporation, that is running a school. They're running it for profit. They're making profit on it, and that, therefore, the borough does not believe the tax exemption for that property is appropriate. If it was a nonprofit organization, then that nonprofit corporation would be eligible for tax-exempt status on the land if the land was used exclusively for school purposes.
Any other questions from members of the board? Once again, this will come back. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Now at this time, if there are members of the public that would like to speak upon these two items, you may do so. Please come forward, state your name for the record. Once again, it's item F and G.
My name is Michelle Nyland. I just want to thank you for visiting this for us. Charter schools do face some unique budgetary challenges, which can cause our budgets to fluctuate year to year in kind of an unexpected manner. Being able to save up a reserve would really be helpful for us to be able to budget, and allowing these funds to roll forward to the next year would certainly do that. You know, we have modifications that can require us to change things in order to meet changing borough code. Our landlord may not have provided that you know, ahead of time, like our sprinkler system that we had to change. We also sometimes face traffic flow issues, which can change year to year because parents drive their students to school at charter schools. That can require light changes from DOT, which we are billed for then. They're just things like that, snow removal, vandalism, things we may not be able to anticipate year to year, that being able to save up would certainly help that. So I really appreciate you considering this. And with regard to the tax funding, paying these property taxes costs about, you know, half the salary of a teacher at our school, and for other charter schools, right at the cost of a teacher. It's for public education, and we really appreciate you guys considering this and seeing us that way. Thank you.
Thank you. Please come forward and state your name for the record.
My name is Chris Whittington Evans. I'm a Fronteras parent. And not to further complicate the issue already, but some of you might know, we actually lease from a church. Our property is on church property. We pay close to $30,000 a year in property taxes for a property that is technically owned by a church who, as I understand, leases space from the school district for their meetings. So I'm not sure where we might fall in that realm as far as the property tax legitimacy between nonprofits and churches and so forth, but we definitely fall in a gray area, and I appreciate your clearing it up. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public that would like to speak upon this issue? Once again, this will come to us at the next meeting for action.
One quick question on that. Fronteras is in a gray area. They're in a church, a nonprofit. They're leasing from a nonprofit. So where does that fall on this whole borough ordinance?
Can you please state your name for the record?
I'm Saul Friedman. I'm the attorney for the school district. In my opinion, the church that owns the land should file with the borough for a tax-exempt status for the property and see what the borough does in that circumstance. The borough can grant it, or the borough can say, even though you're a nonprofit, you know, religious organization, because the school is a public school and not a religious school, it's different than your purposes. I mean, there's all sorts of reasons the borough can come up with if it chooses to deny it, but until we know what those reasons are, we can't challenge it, or we can't, you know, react to it. But that would be an appropriate step to take to force the borough to deal with this issue.
Thank you.
Member Cordero.
Perhaps Dr. Parama could remember it, but I believe members of the assembly had mentioned the issue of the church, and the problem was that because the church was not being used for church services, that they had lost that exemption at some point. So I think that that's what the problem was.
It sounds like administration will dig into this issue and separate the issues and clarify the issues. And thank you.
You're welcome.
One last time, any members of the public that would like to speak upon this issue? This is your chance. It'll come up again at the next meeting for action. Okay, seeing none, thank you. This takes us down to item H. And H, item for discussion, charter sites, COP, financing, co-location, non-charter process. Dr. Paramo.
Thank you, Mr. President. This item was actually a request for discussion only by a board member. In regard to the site selection, a lot of this business happens at the site selection committee of the assembly, the Matsuburo Assembly. I am not a member of that committee. We do have board members that are, but I had requested Mr. Forrest to attend those committees, and I'm going to turn this item over to Mr. Forrest for clarification and for protocol and order.
Members of the board, we received a note from Mr. John Moosey, the borough manager, late this afternoon. We printed that note and handed it out to you tonight. That's an additional piece of information, if you will. These items, as was indicated by the superintendent, were requested to be placed on the agenda at the previous board meeting so that we could have some discussion reference these. To help frame the discussion and to make sure that we are in compliance with the open meeting law, we put together a series of resolutions, which we hope will help guide the board's discussion tonight. Mr. Saul Friedman has reviewed these and does feel that they're in compliance with item H on your agenda and in accordance with the open meeting requirements. So with that, I can turn it back to you or take you through each of the ordinances and describe them at your pleasure.
I think we need to read the proposed resolutions aloud for the public, and then we can discuss each of those individually and field any questions. So if you'd want to start with, if you can list the numbers, the name, et cetera, and then go through the explanation, please.
These were for items of discussion, so they do not contain an ordinance number. Because they're a discussion item at this point, and we can apply the ordinance number if you so desire.
Actually, they don't have a resolution number, but have an ordinance number.
Resolution. The first discussion item, if you will, is notification of concern to the Matanuska Sioux Sitna Borough Assembly regarding interpretation of Matsu Borough Ordinance 19.08.020F2.
Excuse me, we're just going to take a brief at ease to see if we can get some more of this information out so the public can see it either on the board or...
I have copies, people
okay.
desire.
We'll just take a couple minutes and distribute them. Okay, on the table. So there are copies of this ordinance on the table in the back. If folks need to get a copy, take a look at it, and then we'll be back here in 3 minutes. Okay, thank you. Back in session, and we had taken a break in which we had Mr. Forrest prepared to go through the resolutions. There were some copies on the back table, so we're going to turn this back over to administration.
Were you able to get so you could call them up? No. Okay. The first item for consideration is notification of concern to the Matanuska Sioux Sitna Borough Assembly regarding interpretation of Matsu Borough Ordinance 19.08.020F2. Whereas the Matanuska Sioux Sitna Borough School District Board supports all schools and students within the district and desires to ensure that charter schools are appropriately supported in their efforts to utilize and comply with Matsu Borough Ordinance 19.08.020F2 and Whereas the Fronteras APC Board respectfully requested by letter on October 3rd, 2011, that the school district initiate a site selection process with the Mat-Su Borough to identify suitable locations where the school might undertake the development of a facility that will meet the school's long-term needs, and whereas Superintendent Paramo, in her letter to Joe Welliver, dated October 4th, 2011, cited Mat-Su Borough Code 19.08.020F2, specifically the section stating, quote, an existing charter school that has been in existence for 5 years or more may request the borough and the school district acquire permanent facilities for the charter school, unquote. Her letter then cited Mat-Su Borough Code 19.08.020F2B, which states, quote, the charter school seeking a permanent facility under subsection F2 of this section shall recommend two representatives to participate as temporary members on the Borough Area School Site Selection Committee only during the consideration of said charter school facilities. The borough mayor shall appoint two temporary members and the assembly shall confirm the appointments. And whereas the Mat-Su Borough mayor did appoint and the assembly confirmed two temporary members to the site selection committee. And whereas the Borough Area School Site Selection Committee has forwarded a recommendation to utilize existing borough property for the location of a new Fronteras charter school. And whereas Mat-Su Borough Ordinance 19.08.020F2 states, quote, an existing charter school that has been in existence for 5 years or more may request the borough and school district acquire permanent facilities for the charter school. Permanent school facilities include providing for land and buildings as follows, but not limited to a design build, long-term lease or lease purchase, use of an existing borough or school district facility, public financing and construction of a new facility, or by private and or public grant funds for a new facility or upgrade of an existing facility, and whereas the Matanuska Sioux Sitna Borough School District School Board desires full and complete transparency and complete understanding of the Mat-Su Borough Ordinance 19.08.020F2 for this and all future district and charter school site selection transactions, now therefore be it resolved that the Matanuska Sioux Sitna Borough School District Board requests the Matanuska Sioux Sitna Borough Assembly either amend the Mat-Su Borough Ordinance 19.08.020F2 or provide written clarification of Ordinance 19.08.020F2 specifically stating that it is the intent of the ordinance to include the use of borough-owned land and or buildings as an option to consider when reviewing possible school sites. That public financing options include the issuance by the borough of a Certificate of Participation, COP, to finance the new charter school facility, and that the borough has the option to construct the new charter school facility.
Mr. Forrest, can you, for the sake of the audience, can you give the Cliff Note version of what the impact or the intended, what is this supposed to do?
The intent of this item for discussion is to ask the Borough Assembly to clarify the ordinance as to whether or not existing borough property may be utilized for a school, is to ask the Borough Assembly as to whether or not a certificate of participation can be used for a borough school, a borough charter school, or borough school, and is it the responsibility of the borough staff to assist and or construct the new school.
Members of the board, do you have questions for administration? Member Powger.
So this does not say anything about the financing for it. It's just saying if you have a certificate of participation to finance the new charter school, it's asking the borough if they're going to finance the building of a school, whereas when other neighborhood public schools usually go out to bond. Is that right?
Actually, this is just asking the Assembly for an interpretation of the existing ordinance, which does say that the borough will assist in financing and does say that the borough has the responsibility of providing or assisting the charter school in acquiring a permanent facility.
Member Welton.
According to the information, Fronteras has not been in existence for 5 years, correct?
What the discussion has been with the borough and with superintendent and staff is that this request is being made because they will have been in existence for 5 years prior to any construction commencing. So we're trying to be timely in assisting the school in acquiring a facility.
In addition, we've worked with the APC and the principal of the school, and shortly within probably in February, there will be a request to extend their charter.
Member Welton.
This might not be the time to do this, but I think that we need to relook at our paperwork that says 5 years and amend it to make the provision that if they're progressing well, that we will do this ahead of the 5 years.
It's the ordinance.
It's the ordinance. Mm-hmm. Okay. I thought it was in our charter school paperwork. No? Okay.
Member Larson.
It's my understanding that the letter that Superintendent Promo put out started the school site committee in selecting a site for Fronteras with an interpretation that borough property could be used for a charter school. So my thought was that the school district started this process, and the ordinance says school district and borough assembly. So my question is, did in fact the school district start this process, and is the interpretation correct that borough property can be used, and should the borough assembly then rule in, say yes, borough property can be used, and go forward?
Well, to my knowledge, I responded to a request from the APC in accordance to following the ordinance. Whether discussions had taken place prior to the request, I wasn't privy to those conversations, if they occurred. But I was requested by a letter of the APC chair of Fronteras, Michelle Nyland, to take part in the ordinance to move forward.
Member Gaddis, then back to Member Larson.
I am on the school site selection committee and have been there from the start of this process. I have to admit that this particular resolution, which essentially asks whether the assembly, which also has two people on that school site selection, can use borough-owned land, whether they can use us finance essentially the charter school, and whether the borough staff can help out looking for that. Quite frankly, I think that the borough assembly already knows. They already know that we're looking. They're participating. There are some other issues in other resolutions, but personally, I find this to be a moot point. I enjoy the fact that we are discussing the difference and, quite frankly, some of the problems and issues that charter schools have when we compare them with charter and our neighborhood schools. But the assembly knows that we're looking, and I quite frankly don't understand. I've seen a lot of back and forth in regards to the letter that the superintendent passed back and forth, and I guess I just don't get that particular issue. I'm stuck there, but to me it doesn't matter.
Just a point of clarification. I think they've already selected, haven't they?
And for the audience's participate, yes, they have. And we have selected a borough-owned piece of property where the bus maintenance used to be or is, and where the day school will be located as well. It's borough-owned, and that's the area that our demographics guy felt that would work out best. It's close to all. So, I mean, we had other choices, and we didn't take off of the table private lands or co-locating with other schools. So that truly was the best location that we came up with and that the demographics guy came up with. And Frontera said that they liked the best.
Member Larson. Oh, I'm sorry. Member Larson and Member Cordero.
I am, too, on the school site committee. And I did miss the December meeting. And when I read the notes, I got the notes 2 days before this meeting, and came into this meeting, the question I ask, and I continue to ask, is the school site, or I mean the Dr. Promo letter, as far as the school site committee started this process. My question was, there is nothing in the ordinance that says the use of borough property, and all I wanted to clarify from the borough assembly is that the borough assembly would tell the subcommittee to go forward. And, yes, you can use borough property, and you can use COP process. But the borough members, there's at least two members that do know that this process is going on, but the borough members do not. I talked to a borough assembly member after our last school site committee that was not on the committee and asked him point blank, do you know that this subcommittee is doing this and this and this? Which this subcommittee is requesting borough property and COP to build a charter school. And he looked right at me and said, I have no idea what you're talking about. I was not alone when I talked to him. I talked to him with a group. And I contend that the borough assembly should, in fact, rule on this. I feel very uncomfortable as a school board member on this committee saying to the borough, we want you to take millions of dollars in property and allocate it to a charter school without them saying yes. I don't feel that myself as a school board member has that authority, and I really firmly believe that the school site committee has overstepped its bounds without at least getting the borough assembly to say, yes, go forward and do this. It will be a surprise to borough assembly members when this package comes out in front of them. And if that occurs, I'd hate to see the response to borough assembly members saying, where did this come from? And that's what I would like to see with this resolution. At least the borough assembly say, yes, we agree you can use borough property, yes.
Member Cordero, then Member Gaddis.
Mr. President, of course, I am not a member of that committee, so I'm not familiar with how the process works, but I would assume that the assembly would ultimately have to make a decision. And please correct me if I'm wrong. But one of the items that I saw when we received the resolutions is that these resolutions and the process, I believe, were reviewed by our attorney, Saul Friedman. So I would like to ask a question to Mr. Friedman through you. And the question would be is, in your review of the resolutions and the borough process, is the site selection committee doing anything that is irregular that should be of concern that, as Mr. Larson has mentioned, are they overstepping?
In my opinion, the site selection committee is not overstepping the authority provided to the committee by ordinance. And the protection that the school district and the community and everybody in the borough has is that the recommendation of the site selection committee, and that's what it is, a recommendation, must first also go to this school board for approval as a recommendation, and then ultimately the borough assembly makes the final determination. So there is no binding action being taken by the site selection committee except to make a recommendation for where the school will be. But when I read the ordinance, and knowing language and ordinances and how they are drafted and what words mean, it was clear to me that there was no prohibition against public land, borough land being used, and no prohibition against a COP process of financing. The COP is not specifically stated in the ordinance, but public financing is stated in the ordinance. And when you use a term that broadly, it includes all methodologies of public financing. And while there may be a question, you can look at this and say, well, it doesn't specifically say borough land, but it does say provide for land, and including but not limited to, and there's no statement which says, but you can't use borough land. So with all respect to Member Larson, when I read this, I believe that the ordinance is clear enough that this resolution is not necessary, except to the extent that if Mr. Larson, you know, feels that the assembly should be ahead of the curve on this, then this ordinance would give the assembly that knowledge. But ultimately, this matter is going to get to the assembly based upon the recommendation, and if anybody questions it at the assembly level, that's mm-hmm. where it's appropriately questioned.
Okay. Thank you. And may I ask another question?
Yes, then Member Gaddis.
Through the president, Mr. Forrest or Dr. Paramo, after the site selection committee makes a recommendation, where in the process or when in the process would the school district get that recommendation to take action on?
That's part of the issue. Mm-hmm. There has been land acquired for schools without this board getting a formal recommendation.
Okay.
And so we're not sure why that occurred, but there were steps that were, if you read the ordinance, there were steps which were omitted. Mm-hmm. The comment at the last site selection committee by a member of the assembly was the ordinance as written did not apply because it was land acquired next to an existing site. And just so you know, that's what happened.
Okay.
There was land acquired. The site selection committee at the last meeting did ask for a full accounting of where the monies have gone from the site selection committee account because it appears the account is all but depleted. And so just for mm-hmm. for your information, the way that we would interpret this, we being myself, the way I would interpret this. I would have thought that any acquisition of school land should have come to the school board, and it did not.
Okay.
I need to just ask a clarification just for everyone. The committee is voted, not yet the borough and not the school board.
Yes, sir.
So is it safe to say or correct to say that the committee is recommending because they cannot select without the body of the borough and it also has to come to the school board at least for a stamp of approval or some action. So the first step is what you're saying, that the first step is already taking place, which is the committee is recommending. Then it goes to the borough. It should come, I think, concurrently to us. The committee's recommendation would come concurrently to us. Mr. Forrest?
Well, it's my understanding that the committee was made the recommendation, Mr. Larson and Ms. Gaddis were there, and then it went back to staff to formalize it and then move it forward.
To the
assembly, and my interpretation would be the board.
Okay. Member Gaddis and Member Larson?
I guess I was just going to remind ourselves that we're an advisory. The school site selection committee is an advisory group to advise the assembly. And the assembly has many other advisory groups that advise them in many different areas. And how they get their information from the advisory group, it doesn't necessarily, you know, blindside them or whatever. I mean, that's what citizen advisory groups are, and we have school board, assembly, and citizens on that group. So I think we're really aware that we're just advising the assembly.
Member Larson?
Yeah, the mention of the property last year, is that what you were talking about? Yeah.
Yes, sir.
The property last year, by the way, that was purchased never came to the school site committee. It was never voted on. It was never brought forward. And the interpretation at the time was it was not necessary to go to the school site committee because it was a piece of property next to the charter school, and the school site committee finds sites, and thus the sites next to it. And so it never came in front of the school site committee. It was never voted on. It was never voted on at this board, which, if you look at it technically, is a total violation of the ordinance because it never appeared, just to clarify that. But my concern to the school site, and when I was in the school site committee last Thursday, I said, I do not want to stop the process of this going forward. I just want to inform the borough assembly that this is going on, so it is no surprise when it shows up. And virtually, I was told, I actually asked for a resolution and it died at the table. I feel that, you know, if I was on the borough assembly and this amount of property and possibly bonding millions of dollars is out of the ordinary for any advisory committee. And I was just wanting to make sure that once all the work is done, that once it hits the assembly, there isn't a great big surprise. I feel that if that kind of a thing would have come towards the school board and would have shocked the school board, a lot of people would have said, where is this coming from?
I just need to, thank you. I just need to, for myself, clarification. So the process that you cited for last year was less a site selection than a placement. In other words, what they were saying is, since we already are in possession of the site, we're going to determine a placement of a school. Is this correct? Am I interpreting this the right way? Okay.
No. Just additional land was acquired.
Okay. Member Gaddis.
And I think for clarification, the borough assembly can purchase any land that they want to. They don't need to go through the advisory group to make those purchases, and I think that's what happened on that selection that you're speaking of. That's why we were not part of it.
Member Larson.
That question was asked by a school. I've been on the school site committee for 3.5 years, ever since I've been on the school board. That question was asked the borough attorney last year. The attorney came forward in front of the school site committee and said, the borough ordinance sets up the school board as an advisory committee and the school site selection committee as a advisory. The borough assembly does not have to take the advice, but by ordinance, since you set those up, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that you have to utilize them as an advisory board. You have to, or you get rid of them, but you have to use them. You don't have to go along with what they advise, but you have to utilize them. And in this particular case, the school board and the school site committee were bypassed.
We'll go back to administration. Mr. Friedman, do you have anything to add? Or?
Well, only that I think Ms. Larson, Member Larson's correct that there's two advisory steps here. One is the site selection committee, and then it's the school board. And I have seen a written opinion from the borough attorney where the borough attorney acknowledges that and says the assembly cannot decide on a site for a school without going through the two advisory steps. And the borough attorney has also acknowledged what Mr. Larson believes, that the ordinance does allow for borough property to be utilize for school sites. I think those issues are not in dispute. I can't comment on what happened in the past, but I do know that at this point in time, you know, the site selection committee has made a recommendation on a site that's borough-owned, which is appropriate under the ordinance as interpreted by the borough attorney, and now that recommendation has to be acted upon.
Member Cordero.
It's not a question, more a comment, Mr. President. I believe that we should follow the process and wait for the recommendation to reach this body to take action on that. I don't believe that this particular resolution at this time is necessary, although I do appreciate the concerns raised by Member Larson and the resolution. Because, I don't understand the process because I'm not a member of that committee.
Any other questions of administration from the school board? Thank you. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this issue? Please come forward, state your name for record. Thank you, Mr. Freeman.
Hi, my name is Ellen Barossi, and this is my daughter, Gazelle Packer. I am an advocate for education, and I'm here tonight to speak to the charter resolutions, particularly item H, site selection. I'm here to advocate for charter schools. The time has come for charter schools to be accepted and funded equal to neighborhood schools. To be a true advocate of education, one must accept different forms of education's delivery. To do less is to limit the capacity and success of the district and the opportunity for our children. To be against charter schools is truly backwards thinking. I'm upset. Over a year ago, the former superintendent called our proposed charters board unethical at a school board meeting. Unfair and biased practices have no place here. After the board meeting, our group of teachers retreated to the Valley Hotel, where as women of a certain education, poise, and age drank tea and dined on toast in utter silence and disappointment. This is no way to treat the public, the teachers, the children, or yourselves. We later negotiated to become a STEM at Mockentons, and we have the current superintendent to thank for that, and I thank you, Dina. The stress that the district imposes on charters is exhausting. It leaves individuals all washed up, stressed out, and paranoid before the ground has even been broken and continues to plague these boards and the entities. I am asking for simple open-mindedness. I am asking for the board and district to treat charters equally to the neighborhood schools. I am asking for this district to lead the state by example. I realize that there are problems with the state statutes and the borough statutes, and as God is my witness, I will work on that too. I am asking for the anti-charter nature to stop. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there other members of the public that would like to speak upon this item at this time? Please come forward, state your name for the record.
My name is Michelle Nyland. I'm the APC board chair at Fronteras. And I did just want to clarify that prior to Dr. Paramo in her letter to Joe Welliver in October, in requesting that this process be initiated, as the board APC chair, I wrote a letter to Superintendent Paramo asking that site selection process be initiated on behalf of Fronteras. You know, we've been in contact with the assembly as well as school board members. I honestly don't think anyone at the assembly level is surprised that this is happening. If they are, we'd be happy to write a letter or communicate in any way to them to let them know that this is happening, if that could resolve this without this resolution going forward and stalling things for our school. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Please come forward and state your name for the record.
Uh, Chris Whittington Evans. First of all, I just wanted to say that the issues you were discussing surrounding the resolution, it's a little confusing, even to somebody who knows what is going on, in that the issue of monies being appropriated without your recommendation have nothing to do with the issue regarding Fronteras. So I just want that to be clear and in the record. I also want to say that because of the timing of this, there are a lot of people who would like to be here to speak who are not here because of the short notice on this and the fact that a lot of people don't realize that this is sort of all combined under one item for discussion. The ordinance is clear. I mean, it's clear in that it gives a lot of latitude, and I think I appreciate Mr. Larson's concerns and the discussion here, but the ordinance is very clear. It gives broad latitude, and the reason that it does that is because it has to. Charter schools, as we know, are unique in their needs. They're unique in the way that they approach things, and we've embraced charter schools as a means of conveyance for our education in this district. We've obligated ourselves through this ordinance, which the Assembly worked on and approved in 2009, to provide for these schools and to give viable, sustained schools who are serious about their effort to educate our kids the opportunity to have a roof over their heads that they don't have to fight and scrap for. It's clear. It gives a lot of latitude, a lot of breadth for good reason. The Matsubara Assembly knows what's going on with this. I spoke in front of them twice myself to bring the two members who are at the site selection committee now, Ernie Hetrick and Jen Schmidt, to all the members assembled. They know this is going on. This is not a surprise. It's in borough ordinance. I think the Assembly probably knows most of what's in borough ordinance or becomes very familiar with it while they're serving. So they know what's going on with this. We are the first school that is stepping up to the plate. That is going to just by nature bring a certain amount of awareness, a certain amount of working through the issues. If things need to change in the future after we go through it, then I'm sure that there will be a lot of interest in members who will want to make those changes and clarifications. But we're in the middle of this process. We've worked in good faith with the district, with the Assembly, and now with you. And we really appreciate that opportunity. We're very, very grateful for it. We don't know where it will lead in the end. There's a lot of work to still be done. But we appreciate being able to move forward with it and not go backwards. Thank you.
Thank you. Other members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, this is slated to come up at our next meeting. I'm sure there was some question as to whether folks knew about what was going on. This is being broadcasted publicly. There's public record, and there's plenty of people in here that have been part of this discussion. So, at least after this point, I would be somewhat surprised if members of the borough or staff of the borough or anyone actually wasn't aware of what's going on. But in any case, you'll have an opportunity to contact your board members, borough members on this, and give them your opinion. So with that, we're going to take just a quick 3 minutes because we're going to transition into a work session here. I'm sorry. Excuse me. Yes. Yeah, I'm sorry. Let's get back to business here. Just seemed to take for some time.
I can do the
Mr. Forrest, take us through the next one.
Would you like the Cliff Notes version?
Yeah, let's go with the Cliff Notes, and then if we need detail, we'll...
Okay, I'll read the title. Notification of concern to the Matanuska Sioux Sittna Borough Assembly regarding utilization of existing borough property for district or charter school sites. Basically, the Cliff Notes on this are... Has there been a cost-benefit analysis done for the removal of borough land for a permanent school site? That's the Cliff Notes. Not that we believe one way or the other that should not occur, but there is, as previously mentioned, there's value to that land. The economic value of the land should be determined and should be so noted. Because as we look to build schools during the bond program, land acquisition may be part of that, and it would be appropriate to say the borough is dedicating this many acres of land for this site, which we will, by the way, have to do for deed. We will have to specify the site, and deed will have to approve the exact site, and there should be what this is asking for. Not that it not be done, but that an economic analysis of the decision be made and it be public.
Thank you. Any questions of staff or members of the board on this item? Any members of the public that would like to speak upon this resolution that we just gave you the summation on? Once again, you'll have an opportunity to contact your board representatives or your borough representatives to state your opinion, and this will come back at the next meeting. Member Gaddis, you have a question?
Yes, I have a quick one. In regards to, let's say, the Kinnick Middle High School, will we be also asking and getting for deed that economic analysis as well?
It's required.
Okay.
In fact, it is required for the 70-30 reimbursement. And with regard to this transaction, if we are successful in our attempts to get charter schools included in the legislation for 70-30 reimbursement, then this that value of the land for the site could be partially reimbursed by deed.
Well, I guess my question is also, will we be doing resolutions, or is that typically just done?
Because the land would be purchased, it will come to the board through the committee process. And then it will move on to the assembly. The purchase value will be known versus the appraised value. And then it's the appraised value that deed will pay 70% of that. And the borough has 3 years to apply for the reimbursement. And so one of our discussions was, by doing the economic analysis of the site, it may be possible for the borough to recover some money back from the state since they have acquired the site.
Thank you.
Any other questions for members of the board on this particular resolution? Seeing none, let's go to the next, and please do the same.
Reading the title, Notification of Concern to the Matanuska-Sioux Sitna Borough Assembly regarding issuance of a Certificate of Participation, COP, for district or charter school facilities. The Cliff Note versions are, a Certificate of Participation is a financing instrument where you put up collateral, i.e. the new property and building, and you enter into a lease with a revenue stream which has been identified by the governmental unit. These are sold in the public market. And so, therefore, the concern which we are raising here is that because the borough would be the one acquiring the property and issuing the certificate of participation to ensure that the instructional operational dollars of the district were not put at jeopardy, we're asking questions such as, can there be written assurances on how both the debt service, the facility operations, and maintenance costs will be paid by the charter school, and how debt payments for the certificate of participation will be paid by the borough should the charter school default? We further go on to say it would be our interpretation in this resolution that the district should be held harmless should the charter school default, and hold harmless we are defining as it would preclude the borough from a decrease in our per pupil funding by the borough. And so that means that they can't reduce the amount of money we receive per pupil into the district to make a lease payment, keeping the borough whole, but causing the district to lose dollars. That's the request.
Thank you. Any questions of members of the board for staff on this particular item? Member Welton, Member Cordero.
Through the president, Mr. Forrest, do you know, is there any history of the borough ever doing a certificate of participation, period?
Yes, ma'am. There's a fire station and an animal shelter have been built using certificates of participation.
And they aren't defaulting on those?
That's because the borough has identified the revenue stream. In this case, the revenue stream would flow from a charter school. I might point to the ordinance, and in the ordinance from the borough, it currently states that they may not enter into a lease that obligates either the school district, the borough, or themselves to longer than 1 year. With a certificate of participation, depending on the term of the note, probably no less than 10, perhaps as long as 20 to 25 years. That's a long-term obligation, and therefore we're asking that future boards of education not be saddled with this. If the borough wishes to issue the certificate of participation, they should hold the district harmless. Why? We don't own the building. We own no school buildings. And so we're saying the building really belongs to the borough. You would issue the debt. You own the building. It should be your responsibility, not the a future board.
A follow-up, please.
Yes.
Mr. Forrest, what is the history of a charter school defaulting in this district?
Well, in this district, we have one. However, nationwide, it's running about 30%. And in addition to that, it really depends on how the state views it. So there are many options available for financing facilities across the country. And I think you've heard our board president and others say that we would really like the state of Alaska to look at other options. But again, we want to emphasize, we don't want this held up. We want to move forward with this process. We would agree with the charter school, their APC board, and their principal that they need a facility and they need to get out from underneath the lease they have.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Member Cordero, and then Member Larson.
In regards to another of our charter schools that is in borough land, if they were to default hypothetically, what would happen? What's currently within the law that would happen? Who's liable for that?
Well, right, it depends on the lease. Right now, the way some of the leases were written and allowed to go forth, the district is liable for the lease payments.
No, but I was specifically talking about the one of our charter schools that is actually on borough land.
The building is already paid for.
Okay.
It's a borough facility. There's no lease.
Okay. So there's really nothing that exists currently that would deal with that?
No.
Okay.
Member Larson.
In the section that I've got to put my glasses on here. Assurance as to how debt service, but facility operations and maintenance costs, and I assume that's long-term renovation and repair. Like an example would be, I guess central office had a busted pipe the other day, and that in itself would have cost a lot of money. Who in these facilities that have COP, who is obligated to do the maintenance, long-term repair, and operation when it is a borough-owned building?
That is what we're asking the borough to define in writing so that everyone can see that moving forward.
So, because my concern here would be if it is a borough-owned building and it's labeled, or not labeled, but it is a charter school under the district, would that maintenance or secondary costs fall onto the school for long-term maintenance and renovation, which means it's secondary costs that we don't have in our budget?
As many may recall, last year we proposed an alternate funding methodology for the charter schools. If that methodology, and my understanding is it's on the agenda for the next joint district charter meeting, if that methodology were employed, then the district, by definition, would be receiving funds and would incur the responsibility for maintaining the facility because the charter school would be allocating a portion of their funding to do that. No different than a portion of every student's funding in the district now goes to district maintenance. So if that model were used, then it would be obvious it's a district responsibility. If the current model is used, where they are leasing the facility, then it is either the obligation of the landlord, if the lease is written favorably, or it is the obligation, as was previously mentioned, I believe, by the APC board chair. That can become the obligation of the lease individual holding the lease or utilizing the building. So, again, we would like to see some written definition as to where this goes, both for the protection of the charter schools, the district, and the borough. And I might add, in the event that a decision, there are many methodologies you can use to build these buildings. If a design build is built, we would also like to see written assurances as to what the warranties are, who is responsible as we move forward on the design build, so we don't end up with a design build situation as there are school districts currently across the country where they did design builds and the builder is now gone and some of the buildings are failing.
Member Cordero.
Through the President, Mr. Forrest, in the case of the example of Academy Charter, which is on borough land and a borough building, who is responsible for the long-term maintenance there currently?
Well, currently, the long-term maintenance is, we believe, Academy Charter's responsibility because they are being treated the same as the district, and the district is responsible for long-term maintenance. In my opinion, it is something that in the future the school board should visit with the assembly. The assembly owns the building, right, and yet it is the school board's responsibility to go to the public to ask voters to fund long-term maintenance items. Just as a person new to Alaska, that's not normal. Normally, the people who own the building would be responsible for the long-term cost. But in this case, the borough school district relationship in Alaska is somewhat unique, and right now the school board is responsible. As you know, we went to the voters. Some of the money we received was for long-term maintenance.
Right, but I guess to clarify my question is, if for the case of Academy Charter, currently the maintenance is ruled by what, the charter agreement with the district or the borough ordinance?
Academy Charter is doing their own maintenance.
Okay, through the charter agreement.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Any other questions on this particular resolution?
Yeah, one quick question.
Sure, Mr. Larson.
You were talking about routine maintenance. If a major, and I hope this never happens, but if a boiler goes out or over a weekend the school freezes up and the pipes break, so we're talking a major repair issue, the borough owns the building, correct? Then who would be liable for, not liable, but who would do the maintenance? Because what I would worry about is the squabble between two entities trying to figure out and not get anything done. So who would be?
Through the President, I'd prefer to answer this, as Mr. Forrest may not have been in the district long enough, but this actually did occur at Academy Charter School. A roof blew off in the wind. The immediate assistance was given by the school district to fix that roof because children are in the building. I'd have to refer back to some issues of repayment or other payments, but certainly the ultimate responsibility of all public school children in the Matsu Borough is the Matsu Borough School District. So and the statute is written that way. And so we will never leave liability, and whether we ask the borough, I believe, to say, will you do this or not, on any given year, as you know from last year to this year, the borough did not increase their contribution to the school district. Was that due to an issue where they had to pay for something else? I don't know. But ultimately, the borough decides how much they give, and the school district is always responsible for the children. I mean, in essence, in simplicity, we will never, I believe, release our liability according to the statutes that are in the state of Alaska.
Any other questions of staff at this time on this particular resolution? Seeing none, why don't you take us through the last one? There's one more, I believe.
Two more.
Two more? Take us to the next one, please.
The next item, reading the title, Notification of Concern to the Matanuska Sioux Sitna Borough Assembly Regarding Utilization of Non-Voter-Approved Debt to Finance School District or Charter School Construction. Cliff Note Version. The Board of Education and members of the public who were so gracious in working to pass the bond issue have publicly made a promise to not go back to the voters for 5 years for any additional debt. This resolution basically asks for clarification to make sure that it is clearly understood that it is not the school board who would like to issue debt. While a certificate of participation is not voter-approved debt, it is debt to the borough and may impact the credit worthiness of the borough and may influence the ability of the school district to pass a future bond issue because it is taken into account for the overall bond rating. We are asking in this resolution that the assembly make sure that they understand there was a promise to not increase the debt.
Any questions of staff or members of the board? Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this particular resolution at this time? Okay, can you take us to the next resolution?
The next resolution, titled Notification of Concern to the Matanuska Sioux Sitna Borough Assembly Regarding Capacity of the Borough to Support the Building of a New Charter School Facility. Cliff Notes Version. With the passage of a $214 million voter-approved bond issue, it is our current belief that the projects department of the Matsu Borough is stretched to the limit, and adding an additional school will further stretch those resources and may delay the ability of the school to be built in a timely fashion.
Any questions for members of the school board for staff? Any questions from our members of the public wish to comment on this item? Please come forward and state your name for the record.
Chris Whittington Evans, thanks again. I work in the construction field. I work as a designer in an architectural firm. And I can tell you that under a design build scenario, that there are a lot of hungry firms right now. There are a lot of hungry contractors. We see proposals coming out every week, RFPs coming out that are being bid on by literally dozens of firms for design build and design bid build work. Even from the lower 48, where there are contractors who are coming up to do work or design firms who are looking to do work in this state. That being said, I kind of want to sort of speak to these last three as being glass half empty, glass half full approaches to what charter schools bring. Right now, and this was, I think, probably one of the early myths about, or early feelings, I should say, about charter schools. And I have two children in a charter school, and I started out in Larson with my children at the Spanish immersion part of Larson when it was in under that roof. But the financing of charter schools comes from the state, and you guys don't get your cut, right? That's part of one of the rubs, is that the students are not part of the package of funds that would then go through the district for facilities, for all the things that cost money to deliver education to our kids. This is a way of recouping some of that money. This is a way where the $250,000 a year in lease payments that we make every year go into a facility that becomes a borough-owned facility. This becomes a public facility. It becomes a public asset. It's something you can borrow against in the future. It's something that under a condition whereby, God forbid, the school were to default, you could place other needs that you don't have facilities for. The borough is not shrinking. The needs are not shrinking. This is an asset that you can recoup. If you continue to put that funds into private sector, which I know is one of the arguments here, there is no recouping of those funds. I think that the other issue with respect to co-location is a significant one. Co-location is one of the tenets of both the Mat-Su Borough School District Facility Guidelines and the Mat-Su Borough Facility Guidelines. The idea that you can site facilities, public facilities, next to each other, and I can tell you from building a lot of public facilities, may I have a little extra time?
Sure.
Thank you. It costs a lot of money to mobilize and demobilize construction crews. It costs a lot of money to build, put in infrastructure, extend utility lines, put in septic systems, drill wells. When you're looking at financing for a site such as the Bogard site, where the maintenance facility is and the day school is planned to go, for the limited number of students who will be using that site, co-locating another school on that site creates a great economic benefit to that site because you get to spread out the costs of developing that site and infrastructure for it over many students, many more students than what will be there now. So I just want to say that there's some added value, if you look at it that way, to helping public school students who happen to be in charter schools to have public facilities over their heads. Thank you.
Thank you. I believe that's the end of our resolution process for today.
5 minutes, please.
We're going to recess. We're going to recess for 5 minutes. This meeting is back in session. This takes us to item 10, which is a work session FY13 budget. With that, I'm going to turn this over to Dr. Peromo and staff.
Thank you, Mr. President and the board. I'm going to speak to the budget prior to requesting Mr. Forrest to provide a detailed look. We've been through this journey before. Many of you who have been on the board a while have been through the budget process and the journey many times. As you know, difficult decisions lie ahead in regard to the budget, as well as the larger revenue picture, not only in our state, but in our district. Please know that in reality, we are operating this year with approximately 125 less FTE, and as you heard from Mukunda Cantrell, that's actually 200 employees. And our enrollment has increased by 380 students. Additionally, the board has spent a significant amount of time setting its strategic plan and its goals and objectives for me as your superintendent to carry out with the team of leaders, administrators, teachers, paraprofessionals, the whole Mat-Su Borough district team to provide the very best education for the students of the Mat-Su Valley. In the beginning of the year, your 13 primary main objectives I had summed up to the employees of this district in three ideas. First, that we must continue innovation, continue to renew ourselves and what we do for the kids of Mat-Su. That we will offer choice and honor choices of high quality in both programs and schools. And finally, that we will provide the best customer service to our students, parents, and community members. As you have set the tone and tenor of the district through your mission, vision, and goals, I have followed through with the leadership of the district. We have seen terrific gains in literacy achievement, dropout prevention, graduation rates, and efficacy on the business side of the house, so to speak. Please know that our financial reality is not going to diminish our belief and effort in doing the very best we can for the students of Mat-Su. Before presenting this, I want to thank all the team members who worked to put this budget together. It really is a team effort amongst the business individuals and the instructional folks. I spent today speaking with school leaders in regard to the budget, and I want you to know that the term that I used with them was to make every day a million dollar day. For you see, our budget that we're going to present is about $215 million. That includes the PERS and TERS flow through that Mukunda Cantrell also spoke to, which is approximately $26 million. The difference of those two numbers is about $188 million. Our teachers and our staff generally, for the most part, in large majority, operate on a 185-day contract. Every day in MATSU needs to be a million-dollar day, and that is my message. That's our cost. The budget proposal is based on known facts and information, but provides a scaling of areas in the budget for which you can see in different aspects such as transportation, operations, as well as energy money. Please know that the picture we're giving you today is of the known realities in regard to the revenue. As these change, whether it be in the BSA at the state level, whether it be in energy money or transportation or food service, the information will be updated with you. Ratios will not be presented according to how many teachers in classrooms here and there. We wanted to provide you with a different scenario so that you can see. Given each projection level, we will know the equivalent of our revenue shortfall or our deficit, if you will. And on the operational side, Mr. Forrest will deliberately show you and demonstrate where our costs have increased by 6%. 6% in the MATSU Borough School District is $10 million. We don't have a guarantee of the energy money that was given to the district last year at the last minute to all districts, really, which was $2.3 million. And as we've shared earlier, transportation is a deficit next year. We're looking at $4.2 million. You will be shown a budget that demonstrates between known revenue and current known expenses, known meaning what we are operating with this year, that there is approximately a $16.5 million difference. Again, we don't know the final number from the state. We don't know if energy money would be given, and we don't know if transportation costs are going to be taken care of or food service. What you will be presented are only the known facts. Okay? There is action going on, you know, at all levels, but you're going to be provided, as well as the community, with the transparency of what we are guaranteed as of today, January 18th, 2012, for FY13, which begins July 1. Mr. Forrest.
I will move through this as rapidly as possible. Please stop me as I go through if you have any questions. There are a couple slides where we will be asking the school board for an opinion as to what you would like to do. Starting off with just a reminder, we've changed the outlook of the budget calendar, but the key point here is the four public budget meetings and open house presentations will occur throughout the school district in the coming up here shortly in February. Enrollment history, you can notice, and you do have this in front of you in a packet. The enrollment history, you'll notice that we are slowing down slightly, and next year, due to the cohort analysis, you'll see that we really are slowing down a lot. That has to do with the live birth rates. So this is the cohort analysis. And what you can see here is you'll notice, for example, you could take the 2007-08 kindergarten and follow that all the way through by looking at that line and seeing what happened to those kids. We started 1,129, and it's projected that that grade cohort, if you will, by 2014 when they're in the seventh grade will be up to 1321. So we have survival rates, if you will, as they move through the system, and you can see the percentages which we are currently projecting. Here are the percentage changes, just a different way of looking at it. One of the things I'd like to point out, and most of you may or may not know, Nancy Cipollone Munoz will be leaving the district next Thursday. And obviously she has been responsible for this absolutely incredible accuracy rate in your predictions of enrollment. A 0.25 this year. Highest error was 1.92% in A in any math class in the district. And this is consistent over 10 years. A really remarkable achievement to be that close on these predictions. So what is the breakdown? As we've said before, 76% of our funds come from the state of Alaska, 23% from the Mat-Su Borough, 1% from the federal government. This is a breakdown. It shows you that the biggest portion of our money comes from what? The student count. I want to point out the special needs factor is not special education. And that portion is, we'll go through the formula. We do point out here it's special education, career and technical education, English language learners, and talented and gifted programs. So it is worded as per the state statute. You'll notice as we go through this presentation, we are providing you with the statutes. Correspondence is shown as a negative. Why? They only receive 0.8 of the normal funding. The intensive students, of course, are the special education students with the highest needs. So, not going to spend a lot of time on this. It's really in this for people who want to go through it. This is the state formula. It shows you last year. It shows you this year. Why the gap in last year? Because we've added what? The vocational education factor, which was passed last year. So it takes you through the entire formula, and then we will take you through each step. So we talk about some things. The foundation formula is driven by the number of students enrolled and attending during the official count. The official count is a 20-day time period that ends on the last Friday in October every year. The official count is referred to as the average daily membership, or ADM. In our district, full-time equivalency students enrolled, as the superintendent mentioned earlier, 17,334. Preschool, we had 118.62. The correspondence students, the students here at this school and Twin Lee Bridge Charter School, 1,657.05, and intensive needs count came in at 322. So now we walk you through the formula. As Alaska Statute 14.17.450, you can see the very first portion of the formula is step one in the size factor. What I want to take a second to point out is, notice that really, when our schools start going over 400, we start losing, because these are point. They're below a 1. So the state of Alaska is somewhat unique because of its geographic situation, and the state recognizes that small schools are the norm, not the exception in this state. And so when we add modulars to a school like Wasilla High School, we're losing money. That's what it amounts to. So the size factor is first. We take that for each and every school. We take it times the population in the school. It is important to note that if you have less than 39.6 kids, you get 39.6 kids anyway. And so that's how the factor works. Step two, we then take the district cost factor. Anchorage is 1. So we get to add a 0.064, and they start taking from step one, they take that 17,334, they apply the size factors. Now we take step two, we apply the district cost factor. We add 1,153, so now the average, the ADM is up to 19,172, basically. Step three is the special needs factor. Remember those areas I pointed out that were highlighted in yellow? And we add 3,834 kids. Step four, we add the voc ed factor, new last year. And you can see we add 230.06. Step five, this is where the correspondence kids are calculated. We take the correspondence kids that were in the count, multiply them by 0.8. We get to add, therefore, only 1,325. Now we are up by step five. Our 17,334 is up to 24,561. Step six, the intensive needs. We get to take the intensive needs students, multiply them times 13, which adds 4,186. And now our ADM is up to 28,747.68. This is the number used for the calculation in the state aid. Step seven. We are calculating the state aid. The 28,747.68 times the base student allocation. This is the number you hear when you hear people in the state discussing how much should we raise the BSA, base student allocation. And in this case, it was $5,680 last fiscal year, and it's $5,680 this fiscal year. So our basic need is $163,286,821. Then we have to calculate the minimum local share. And so this is the calculation. I won't waste time talking about it. This will be posted on the web. But it's $24,167,000. Then you take the minimum calculation away from the basic need. Remember step eight. And what we have is the net basic need of $139,000. This shows you that the 23% coming from the borough. That's the 23% minimum required. Then you go through, and now they have a separate, it used to be a grant, the quality schools, $16 times the count. We get to add $459,000. You add that to the net basic need. And we have net foundation funding, $139,579,581. That is the amount of money we will receive in the general fund from the state of Alaska. Then you get to calculate the maximum that the borough could give. And here's the calculation, $61,723,000. And then here is the history. As you can see, the maximum are the red bars. The actual contribution are the blue bars, and the minimum are the green. And then you can see how much we received on a per student basis actual. And notice, you were shown this number, FY11, tonight by the auditor. So we're actually already in 12, and notice the per student has gone down. We wanted to show you a request. This is a slide where we're going to be seeking input. We wanted to show you what it would take to increase the local contribution on the average property owner or per $100,000 of assessed valuation. I requested the borough CFO provide me with those numbers. I have not received the information to date. I'm sure she'll get to it shortly, and we will update this slide. What you see here are some recommendations. Recommend that the borough establish a more consistent funding pattern. The graph is pretty graphic in that it's not consistent at all. Up, down, up, down. Then you can see here it shows what happened. We had 48, 347, 365, and then they held that constant. But when you do it on a per student basis, it actually went down. And you can see that we've gone negative on per student basis before. What we are proposing and need input from the board on is that we approach the borough and ask for a 3% increase in funding from the local portion. Why 3%? Well, 1.5% for last year and 1.5% for this year. Why would we ask for this, and what is that second bullet? We'd like to be in the midpoint between Anchorage and Fairbanks. Why? When you look at the next slide, you can see here is the assessed valuation growth for Anchorage, Fairbanks, and the Mat-Su Valley. The purple line is the CPI. You can see that Fairbanks is well above the CPI and growing at a nice rate. Anchorage is above Fairbanks. But the borough with the greatest increase in assessed valuation, therefore the ability to collect revenue to support education, is the Mat-Su borough. Without doubt, the highest assessed valuation growth since 2002. That said, how do we stack up? In relation to Anchorage, if we had the same percentage of the maximum allowed for a local level as Anchorage, Next year we're anticipating that we would receive $20,820,000 more. This year, if we had the same percentage, that's this year. We would have had $20 million more in our budget. Fairbanks, if we'd have the same per pupil funding as Fairbanks, we'd have $9 million more in our budget. We would not be talking to you about laying people off if we were receiving this local contribution. Why? That is why we are recommending that you seek to obtain local funding that puts you at the midpoint between Anchorage and Fairbanks. That's exactly where we are on size. Anchorage is the largest district. We're the second largest, and Fairbanks is the third. We provide you this information both on this slide, on a per pupil basis, and on the next slide we show you the percent increase. So you can see that Anchorage during this period of time from 2009 to 12, 14.26. From the Mat-Su has gone up 5.10. I'd like to stop at this point and ask, is the board comfortable with the administration's recommendation of 3% moving forward, or do you wish to change that?
You need an answer right now?
No. We need an answer by the end of March when we
so
must
So we can think about this between now and the next board meeting.
Yes, sir.
And put that on the agenda. And
yes. What?
Okay. I think I'd feel more comfortable doing that, taking a little time to think about it.
Okay.
Member Larson?
Put it on the agenda as an action item, then? Or on the agenda as a voice vote? Or
it's
what?
It's a discussion item, a recommendation.
Okay. We'll do that. Moving on, fund balance. As previously indicated, our fund balance would be $1,400,000. And we tell you the lapses to the borough. You can see the history on this slide. 2008, you received some energy money right at the end of the year from Governor Palin. So what are best fund balance practices? Hence the reason we'll be coming back to the board with our request for a resolution to the assembly to keep the fund balance. The Government Finance Officers Association from 2002 redefined it, saying no less than 5%, 15% of regular general fund revenues. In 2011, the Government Finance Officers Association said, with all of the trouble, they think that governmental entities should incorporate in their policies a two-month general fund operating reserve. What does that look like? Well, we have $1,400,000. If we were just going for the 5% level, we'd need $9,169,000 more. So we're 86.75% below the 5%, the old recommendation. If you look at the new recommendation, we're $35 million, is what the recommendation would be. So we're $33,835,000 below, or 96.02. I must point out that we're showing you the GFO recommendation. We would not agree with this. We think it's way too high. It's also, it would be in violation of state code. State code says no more than 10%. So you can't go above 10%. We'd be very happy to be at the $9,169,000 addition to provide for smoothing of expenditures as we move forward. So, little correction here. You can see that on this slide, we're saying 72.4% was devoted to instruction in the year 2010-11. The auditor showed you it was 78%. What's the difference? We had to go to press before we had the final audit numbers. We'll adjust this slide based on the audit numbers. That's significantly better, of course. However, you can see that we spent 81.72% on employee compensation in that year, actual expenditures. And this year, this fiscal year, the 10-11, we look to be at 75.49% for student instruction in the budget. We hope that grows. But we're at 83.21% employee compensation.
Yes, Member Welton.
Does the expenditures, the employee compensation, include the pass-through?
It does not. I was just going to point that out. Thank you for asking that. On the bottom, we show you the on behalf of the $26 million. And so that actually would be added on. We have chosen to show you all the budget numbers without the pass-through, because the pass-through really occurs after the fact. The state, we do a calculation and we tell the state, do this, do that. You will see some subsidies in here, and we're going to point those out in a minute. So this would be the proposed, as written, 75.22% student instruction and 83.3% for employee compensation. Now, very preliminary. You've seen these staffing numbers once before. We're showing you, as Dr. Paramo indicated, no recommendation at this time for staffing levels. We do want to point out that in the budget you adopted, as you recall, we did not have the extra money from the state when we proposed it to you. So originally, we thought we were going to have to drop down to 529.2. We actually were able to stay at 561.32. That difference, however, was still 56.38 between what the previous year total was. And we show you all the different categories and how things changed. So you have the detail and the certificated total, et cetera. When you get to the school total, important to point out, schools went down 5.92%. Now we show you the administration totals. Administration staffing went down 8.84%. Again, doing as Dr. Paramo indicated, trying to keep the resources in instruction. We showed you this slide last year. We've adjusted it to current cost. This is the difficulty in attempting to reduce class size or to maintain class size. You can see that if you want to reduce class size by 2 students on average district-wide, it takes 51 teachers, roughly. That's $5,227,000. So it's very difficult to maintain class size when you have shrinking resources. So what are our assumptions for what you're going to see on the budget? 0 1-time state operating budget appropriation, meaning that one-time energy money, we're assuming we're not getting it again in these predictions. We're assuming no increase in the base student allocation. We're assuming the 1% career and technical education stays in the budget, that the borough contribution is zero, and that the increase is 2% for all employee groups as per the contracts. Health insurance was a 90-10 split in 11-12. However, the contract now calls for a 50-50 split on any increase, and that is what we are assuming within this budget. The amount of increase we're assuming for the health insurance is directly from what we've heard from NEA Trust, and that's it's really ranging between 15 to 20%. So here you have the numbers, and you can see what happens here. 162 rounded off is the number of staffing units. That would increase, if they were all classroom teachers, class size would go up 6.48. We all know that they won't all be classroom teachers, so this is worst case. We've made a slight modification in our presentation this year, and what we've done is we've said, okay, we're going to fix the problem this year, so no deficit goes up here. So if you fix it this year, 100%, you'd actually have $6,487,000 next year because you fixed it this year and you've reduced your expenditures dramatically. This is where the fund balance comes in. If we had a fund balance, we wouldn't have to make such a dramatic reduction. We could smooth it over these years. So this shows you the impact. If you fix it each year, you have a problem, and you're allowed to carry a fund balance and bring it to here. This is what it looks like when you show the reduction and it isn't fixed. You can see it climbs to $37 million. So it really becomes, unmanageable. Here we go again. We show you the 162, the 6.5 increase. If we got a 1% increase in the BSA, we would still have 145 units or FTE that would have to leave. Notice transportation. If we got a 1% increase, we just solve that problem. So it's important as we talk about going after both BSA, that we also talk about getting transportation funded appropriately in the state. And then we have 2% and a 3%. On the next slide, we again show you the base, but we also show you what would it take for us to get to zero in the general fund without transportation. It would take $554, or a 9.8%. Why? Remember, we received one-time money. We have to make up the one-time money and then make up the New Year's expenditures. None of us believe we're going to get a 9.8% increase in the BSA. And then we still would have transportation to deal with if they don't take care of it. You've heard many of the agencies in the state have come together with a recommendation of 5.6%, or $320 in the BSA. This is what that looks like for us. And here is an increase of $438, almost fixing, if you will, the general fund, but fixing the transportation. So just a couple different scenarios. Now, what are the major components of the budget? We're currently estimating that the raise, the 2% raise, that change is 2%, as indicated, but as a percent of the new budget, that raise is going to take 1.11%. Step and column movement less the retirement offset, we're estimating will take 1.5% of the new budget. The health, life, dental, vision increases 2.16% of the new budget, and the mandatory employer contributions go along with the raises, et cetera, 0.41. So the $10 million Dr. Paramo mentions, there it is, $10,365,000 directly related to employee compensation increases. That is 5.2% of the new budget, just the raises. So here's our structural deficit chart. You've seen this before. This is what it looks like if we can't fix the problem. Then we talk about food service. So there are some discussion items for the board. You see we have been running a deficit. We're predicting the deficit will continue unless the state were to pass the law which was proposed last year that added money to that. How is the deficit in food service derived? Pretty much, we had this discussion last year. The free breakfast program is running $466,000, and the free and reduced lunch program subsidy $58,000. That's your $524,000 required for the subsidy. Transportation, this gives you an idea of how much we're talking about. Revenue versus expense. Here it is, statewide. We are not alone. You'll notice that statewide, on average, 13.35% below this fiscal year. While we're 21.43 below expected expenditures, we're not the worst on a percent basis. Poor Craig City is at 39%. And you can see Anchorage is at almost 5%. And some of these numbers are big. So if the state wanted to fund in the current fiscal year transportation, it's roughly $8 million to make up the deficits. When you look at the next fiscal year, it, of course, gets worse.
Mike? Through the president.
Yes.
Wasn't it the case that if the state didn't cover the entire cost of transportation, that the borough would actually consider funding that? And if that's the case, when can we approach the borough for that?
The borough?
Yeah.
Oh, well. Yes, sir. Sorry. We did present that. We would have to show that we have no money in the general fund, is what we've been told.
Okay.
So we would approach the borough in the event the state doesn't fund it after we wipe out every single dime we have in the general fund.
But isn't that the money that is budgeted for programs?
No, there'd be money left over.
Okay.
We would continue. It would be all reserves. We would truly be at zero.
I see. Okay, thank you.
And as I mentioned to the board, we are a step. We have – Dr. Paramo is, for example, must approve any increase or change in staffing, and we are attempting to save mid-year again just like last year. So we are attempting to accrue some reserves in the event this happens. And then next year, you can see it's 16.48%. These school districts, we're all trying to work together to approach the state to say, you really need to take a look at this as to where we're going. Look at Port Craig City, 76.25% if they don't receive some assistance is their current estimate. That would be it, Mr. President.
Thank you. Member Lacey.
Through the President. The presentation from the accountant pointed out, and correct me if I'm wrong here, that there was a $6 or $7 million that was taken from the general fund and put into capital improvement projects. Okay.
Yes, sir. I can address it.
Why?
You voted to do so. We gave you a resolution.
So?
Yes, sir.
I said that?
The board did. But let me explain where that money came from. Last year, we had ARRA funds.
Right.
And we directed to spend the ARRA funds to ensure there was not any issues with having to give any of the money back to the federal government. Some of the money that accrued to the $6 million carryover, basically, came from the transition, if you will, of spending those federal dollars before local dollars. So that was a portion. The other portion was, as you recall, we had a structural deficit. And pretty much in September, we stopped all hiring and started cutting the budget. And so that accrued that. That meant that we had some money to put towards the SERP, because that one-time federal money wasn't totally enough for the SERP. So we had money for that. And then we also were accruing money throughout the year. There were also savings with regard to health insurance that had been unanticipated. So the board this year passed a resolution to establish a health insurance fund. And should we have health insurance savings this year, it will be our recommendation that you move the money to the health insurance fund to mitigate any increases in subsequent years. We did not have that mechanism available. We came to the board with a list of projects, and the board voted to fund those capital improvement projects rather than give the money to the borough.
And we approved this.
Yes, sir, you did.
One more question.
Yes, sir.
So if they were ARRA funds, and you spent them on a capital improvement project?
No, we spent them on salaries.
Okay. And now my third question. From that, I gather we're going to lose 150-some teachers in the next year. Is that correct?
We would not anticipate losing that many teachers. This is the worst-case scenario.
Worst-case scenario, we're losing 150. Let's just bank on that. Right?
Not all teachers. They're not all teachers.
Okay. It's going to become a point where we can't have a school system anymore because we simply don't have people to teach there, to work there.
Well, I'll give you my experience in California. You will not be offering some of the programs you offer today. You will be able to offer basic K-12 education. You will not have many of the programs you have today if the funding and or expenditures are not addressed. There are two sides to the equation. One, we have to reduce expenditures. Two, we need to increase revenue.
So,
sure.
Matt, so, in that sense, if we get vocational money from the school and we don't have any vocational teachers, that's even more money we're not going to get, right?
Well, we would not cut vocational teachers if we have vocational money like we do.
You just told me that we're going to have a K-12, nothing else, right?
No, I said your programs won't be the same. For example, you have... we went through this discussion last year. There are almost no nurses left in the lower 48. There are almost no certified librarians in the lower 48. There are almost no PE teachers in elementary in the lower 48. The bottom line is, when you run out of money, you cut those programs that you as a board, after receiving recommendations from administration, feel are your core. Or programs for which you are not funded. I'm not recommending any of that today. I need to say that again. There are no recommendations to cut any programs today. Please, librarians and coaches, do not call me.
May I, one more? So basically this is a scare tactic, for lack of a better term. This is the doom and gloom. We need to prepare for the worst, and you know, maybe the good Lord or somebody is going to give us some more money.
Through the President.
Sure.
We're actually presenting the reality because
a hope and a prayer really isn't going to get us the funding. What we know of as January 18th about what is coming to school district in the order of a BSA, no energy money, and we know we have a deficit in transportation, this is the real picture if nothing changes. We do have a lobbyist. The board has passed legislative items that included transportation, included looking at the BSA, and so the session just started yesterday. This is a real picture of the real known facts as of today. It's not meant to scare anyone, but just to inform about how our district is funded, about the realities of the local contribution, and the realities of the cost. We have a 6% increase in costs. 5.2 of those is, we have 2,200 employees, me included, that our costs are going up, and that the majority of that was in health. I mean, we just, that's, and that isn't just a Mattsu issue, that's a national issue. But those are the real numbers as of known facts today. The purpose is not to scare. I spoke with the principals today. It's to be realistic about where the numbers come from and what's happening around the state.
Member Welton.
I just would like everybody to recognize that maybe there aren't 162 teachers. It's the increase in the number of students per classroom on the average, and we know what an average is like, is anywhere in there. It's going to be tough, and I realize that this is worst case scenario, but I have heard people say, too bad. They have had enough of property tax. I know compared to the lower 48, we pay no taxes, but people in our borough do not listen and do not hear that because this is their reality.
Member Forrest. Mr. Forrest, Member Larson, then Member Lacey.
I would like to point out that last year we built a budget in the beginning on the assumption that we would receive a BSA increase. And then as the legislative session progressed, it became obvious that was not going to happen. This year, because the governor has announced early on he is not proposing a BSA increase, he is not proposing replacement, he's just saying, I'm going to keep you funded exactly the same level you were funded. Therefore, this budget is not a scare tactic. It's as Dr. Paramo said. It is what we know today. Always before, the state gave a BSA increase. Last year, we now know that may not be the case. So we don't want people to think that this is a scare tactic. It's the math that exists today. It's what we need to be talking to our legislators about. But we will keep the board updated the minute we think there are savings on the expenditure side. This is pre-scrub of existing programs within the district. We're going to, one more time, go through and see what can we reduce as far away from the classroom as possible. And I think there's some savings there. I think there's some savings in our calculations on salary expenditure costs. As you know, we're installing a new business system. We want to use the new system to calculate the new cost. Why? We know for a fact that when you end up with savings at the end of the year, they're of little or no value to the educational process. You have held back teacher assets all year long only to find out that you had savings in salary and benefits. We are making every effort to get the new system in time to use the new diagnostic and forecasting tools to be more accurate. If we can do that, then we can reduce some of these units because we can say our expenditures will go down without actually losing a person. And that's part of what we're trying to do. So Mr. Lacey is correct. You don't want large fund balances at the end of the year unless you can keep the fund balance and spread it. If we'd been able to keep the $6 million, we would have been able to spread that and less people would be in this boat. We would never have come to the board and said, we want to move this much money into capital projects when we know we're going to have reduced revenue in the future, we would come to the board and say, we want to put it into the fund balance because we want to spread this over a number of years to reduce the pain.
Member Larson, then Member Lacy.
The increases that we have no control over this fiscal year is 2% salary increase, merit increase, and commodities and stuff and oil increase. What is that? Staffing, but the commodities, leases and stuff like that. How much is that going up?
Right. As you can see, we actually are showing a reduction in the expenditure for textbooks. We show services going up. I need to point out, why is that going up so high? Excuse me. In the past, this district has it was in the habit of getting three-year contracts for software, and a lot of those contracts are due. Justin Michaud, your CIO, is now working with those companies. I've asked him to, let's get rid of this three-year nonsense, so every 3 years you get hit with a bill like this, and let's get it to an annual payment. That way, while it will be greater on an annual basis, it will be the same every year, and the board will not be faced with looking at a large number to renew all of its software contracts at one time. So that's part of that number. There are a number of other service contracts we're looking at getting those on an annual basis, so you're not looking at these large increases. But the service contracts are going up regardless. They are going up, and we're having a problem there. We are showing an increase in basic supplies. Some of those are your K3, I think it's K3, Dr. Paramo or Mr. Stone. Those are expendable supplies. They're not really textbooks. They're workbooks.
Consumables.
Thank you. So those are going up, and so that's what those are, and that shows the percent increase.
Member Lacy.
I think I said this last year. If we're this doom and gloom, then we need to start saving every darn dime. I don't need, really, a new computer. This is $500. It's one little thing. If we're this far in the toilet, we need to deal with it and find savings wherever we can, period. Now, I hope I get some financial documents so I can start looking through this, but we have to do something. I don't buy the fact that, well, you know, we can do this contract. We need money now, not money later. You see what I'm saying?
Well, if I might address that. We have a board directive to move you to electronic board meetings. That laptop is part of that directive.
And you're right, and maybe that was a mistake on my part.
But that said, that came out of CIP money, so it's not ongoing money.
Other questions for staff? I appreciate the information. I personally, it's just my nature. I look at this as a problem-tunity. In other words, the numbers are, you know, it's a cost benefit analysis. It's a cost analysis. But I think there's things that we can do. For example, we didn't create this system. We did not create this system. We can't even raise money in this system. All we can do is ask for money and provide a program. And I think this real potential financial funding crisis or issue, I think, provides us an opportunity to ask the state and ask the borough what it is that you want for an educational program. We don't have the doom and gloom part is just an emotional thing that folks can attach to it. I suggest we don't do that. I think we approach this methodically. What kind of program do you want? If you want that type of program, it's going to cost this. If you want this type of program, it's going to cost this. But this is what we're looking at, and this is where we're headed. These things, education costs money. And oftentimes, policymakers view school districts as always asking for money. There's a lot of slop in the bucket. Always asking for money, always asking for money. I was listening to the presentation. I'm thinking if we do a lot of these efficiencies that you're talking about, we're still looking at a structural deficit. No matter how we cut it, it may not be $27 million, but it's still going to be multiple millions of dollars. And so the state and the borough, and we, I think it's our, we have to do some due diligence and decide. We need to offer the state and the borough options. And we need to offer them, I think we need to press for more money because this is their system. But if they don't want to give us more money, I think we need to change the system. And I don't believe it's impossible to change the system. But we'll never know unless we try. But at the very least, we inform policymakers and those that have their hands on the levers, the mechanisms to shake some cash loose, what it is that you want. We'll provide, you know, we our job is to administer programs. Again, we can't raise money, so we need to ask them for money to cover the costs. If they don't want to give us the money to cover the costs, then they need to suggest, we need to suggest to them, and we need to have a dialogue as to what needs to be changed in terms of law or regulation that will decrease the cost. But you can't keep what you have in place now, statewide and boroughwide, and expect to get the same, expect to fund it at the same level. It's not happening anywhere. So I don't look at it as gloom and doom. I look at it as we need to really take a look at where we want to go and what we want to deliver and let folks know what it's going to cost. And if they don't want to pay for it, then they need to change the laws and rules. And if they don't want to do that, then we're really in a semi-impossible situation. Anyway, so I'm sure we'll talk more about this. We'll get more information. We're going to have to make some decisions. Yes.
Please note that on item 6, there'll be a request and speaking with the president and vice president, if in addition to A, under superintendent update, we have capital projects update, that a B from here on out would be the budget update. And as new information comes, that we make this PowerPoint not only transparent on our website, but that the new revenue is placed in there. So it really doesn't become like a fear scare tactic, as Mr. Lacey had mentioned, that we want to keep as we become updated with new information, that should flow right through the system. And so each board meeting, we would provide a simple update of where we are, would be a suggestion continuously under item 6, superintendent update.
So at this time, we are done with that item. We go on to item 11, future items, future business. We have a meeting February 1st, 6 p.m. at Willow. On February 1st, it's at Willow. February 15th, 2012, 5 p.m., there's special recognitions, and the 6 p.m. regular meeting is going to be at Palmer High. Is there any additional future items at this point? Member Lacey.
I believe the last meeting I asked for us to come up with some kind of an electronic policy dealing with the open meetings law and our computers and cell phone texting, and I haven't seen anything. I thought we were going to talk about that tonight.
Okay. So there's a request by Member Lacey to discuss policies regarding electronic communications. Anyone else have a future item?
There is a board meeting in March, the first week of March, and then during the next second week of March is spring break, and the third week of March we have a board meeting. However, on March 12th, there is a joint meeting scheduled. I had a brief discussion with Mr. Moosey, the borough manager, that is actually a time in the school district that is a spring break, and we encourage our employees to take off when children are not in school rather than when children are in school. Given that, I let him know that there may be interest on our board to have that be another date in March. That they would suggest, and he thought that the assembly might like it as well because they could attach it to another meeting because they're busy folks, that could also be an evening off for them. If the board desires this, I would approach Mr. Moosey in an official manner with a letter to work out some possible dates that would be mutually convenient for both the board and the assembly. but I wouldn't want to move forward if our board wanted to have that March 12th date. Oh, it's actually the 13th, which is the Tuesday.
What's the feeling of the board? Should we see if we can change that meeting? Okay.
I will move forward with Mr. Moosey.
Okay. This takes us to... I'm sorry, go ahead.
If anybody's interested, and I think that all school board members should attend at some time in their career, there's a school site selection committee February 9th. And if anybody would like to go to it, let me know. I'll change places with them. You're going to go?
It's on my schedule. I'm the alternate.
Because I've got a board run, and it's from 3 to 5. So
it's on my schedule. Yeah.
So, and those are open meetings, by the way. Anyone can attend.
Anybody can attend that, yes. Got and it. I encourage people to attend it. That. Really do.
Okay. Okay, with that, we're on item 12, and this is the last person to be heard on non-agenda items. Once again, the speaker states his or her name for the record. The speaker is limited to 3 minutes per meeting. The speaker is limited to non-agenda items. Agenda items will be open for public comment as they appear on the agenda. The speaker's comments should be appropriate for all audiences, including school-aged children. The speaker is limited to comments of a general nature, positive or negative, which may not be attributable to any specific individual. Issues involving concerns specific to any single individual should be submitted in writing and given to the board clerk to be resolved. The issue may be determined to be appropriate for persons to be heard or may be handled in an executive session or may be routed through a more appropriate complaint process. No disturbance or willful interruption of any board meeting shall be permitted. Persistence by an individual or group shall be grounds for the chair to terminate the privilege of addressing the meeting. The board may remove disruptive individuals and order the room cleared if necessary. This is not a question and answer time. Speakers may be referred to the superintendent or designee or take the issue under advisement. This is a maximum of 1 hour per meeting, so this is our second 30 minutes. So is there any members of the public that would like to come and speak before the board on non-agenda items? If so, please come forward and state your name for the record. Seeing none, this will take us to our next item, which is correspondence, board committee reports. Do we have any board committee reports at this time? Seeing none, this takes us down to the next item, which is item 14, comments from school board and administration. Let's start with administration first.
Mr. Stone.
Not at this time.
Mr. Forrest. I have no further comment either.
And we lost Delaney. She had to go and do homework. Good job. So let's go and member Larson. Comments. Seeing none, member Gaddis. Member Pauser. Member Welton.
You know me. I have to have some comments here. I noticed in the update on the talented and gifted, Houston High School is completely out of the loop there. Is there anything that happens at Houston High School that can be considered advanced placement or talented and gifted?
We can get your report.
Okay, that can go in my reading file. Thank you.
Yeah, we can put that in a board connect too for you.
Member Lacey.
I think I said enough for one evening.
Member Cordero. I want to thank Mattsu Central. It's a beautiful building, ever-increasing enrollment. It's a very attractive program for many members and families, students of our community. So I just want to thank them for having us here. I appreciate the public coming. I wish you all a happy new year. Obviously, we have some issues that we have to deal with. This is inherent in having a school district. But, again, I want to leave on a positive note. We have issues to deal with, but I don't think they're insurmountable. They may take some real creative thinking, but I think we've got the firepower within our staff, and I think we've got the will within our board to make these things happen and solve these issues. So with that, we are going into an executive session. Can you help us out there, Member Wilton? You're very good at this.
And to go into executive session for matters the immediate knowledge of which would clearly have an adverse effect upon the finances of the government unit. Subjects that tend to prejudice the reputation and character of any person, provided the person may request a public discussion, matters which by law, municipal charter, or ordinance are required to be confidential, matters of confidential legal counsel, or pending litigation. We are going into executive session for the superintendent quarterly report, negotiation items, and first student contract, and the people involved will be the board, Dr. Paramo for part of it, Katie Gardner for part of it, Saul Friedman, and Ken Forrest, and Mr. Stone.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Any dissent? Okay, we'll be heading to executive session. Before we go there, it's 9:30. It's 9:30, and
I will make a motion that we go past 10 o'clock if we so need to.
Is there a second? Any dissent? Motion passes. At this point, we'll take 5 minutes, a real 5 minutes. And where is the executive session going to be held? Straight through. Okay, so 5 minutes. Let's make our way to the executive session. Thank you.